August 8th, 2013 F-com.
But still, you know, in terms of trapping, I mean, what I really have trapping for,
yeah. Well, that's the AFF, too.
We have a lot of guys doing a lot of extra work over there to try to satisfy these guys in a timely manner, and just for the convenience of starting to control us a little bit.
So that you don't have to provide
all right.
All the way up.
Hello. I don't know if anybody can hear on this thing. Is this it?
Yeah.
Is that me?
They have a speaker here. But
right. Those on the phone, we're still gathering, and I'm not sure how the acoustics are in this room. We're in the fifth floor room, which has got a lot of fancy gizmos. So, if you can't hear anybody talking, please tell us. Somebody reply to that.
I can hear you, Vern.
All right.
Let's do a test.
Yeah. Hey, Trevor, say
something. Can you hear me?
A little bit of an echo, but I could hear him.
Okay.
Huh. Interesting. Guess it's all wired in. All right, so I'm going to put you on mute, so hang tight. So that's Dave Wills, I guess, Lors, of course, you know, should I have to go get him? Tom? Yeah, I can see Tom calling him. That's a Dave Manhart trick. Oh, my back hurts. I can't, like, come downstairs.
Thank you.
But this is, I think they're going to spend the next they're going to spend the next year building a huge new building in the parking lot. I don't know just like different purposes, but but just putting like another building like that right here.
Congestion, yeah. I would have to leave it the way it is.
I think we got everybody. Except the Lord.
It's amazing. I thought today's trend is to, the first thing is
good morning. Hey, this is Bern. Is Tom Lures on the phone?
This is a pretty big circle here.
All right. Well, we're just waiting for him to show up and we'll get started. Hang tight.
The three tables so we can't see each other.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is a big. You're almost like this one.
I guess I could just do this. It's like a control man station.
The core website was down 15 minutes ago, or it wasn't loading on my computer.
Website for what?
Just like on the agenda.
Really?
Well, I mean, well, this is but that could have been something about my blog.
Could have been anything with us. Well, all right, let's get started. The heck with Tom. He'll show up at 10 o'clock. Although he might cut some of that time off by coming down the stairs. So.
Has joined the conference.
All right, this is Bern. We're at FBOM. We're going to start. We'll start with finding out who's on the phone. I know Dave Wills, I heard you.
Yeah, I'm here, Bern, thanks. Rick Martinson.
Hey, Rick.
John Bailey.
John.
Catherine. Oh, sorry.
Sorry.
You go first.
Ken phone. Hey.
This is Catherine Costell from ODF&W.
Okay. Is that Doug Goo? Anybody else?
Don Wharf, Pacific States.
Alrighty. Well, we're going to go around the room and then we'll review the agenda and get started. So, starting in the back with Shane.
Shane Scott, Public Power Council.
Thank you for letting me know.
Appreciate it.
First, I had a Mensick, smoke monitoring McNary.
Bernard Klatt, CORE.
Christine Peterson, BPA.
Mio Zindel, CORE, John D. Dem.
Brent Lawson, CORE.
John Tackley, CORE.
Bob Corey, CORE, the Dallas.
Ben Hoffman, CORE, Bonneville.
Andy Traylor, CORE.
Nathan Zorich, CORE, Chris
Dielson. Chris Bansfield, CORE, Refugia.
Gary Hundreds, No Fisheries.
Trevor Conger, No Fisheries.
Scott Benton, CORE, Bonneville.
Carl Douglas, CORE, McNary.
Ann Sitter, CORE, Walla Walla District.
Ed Bowles, CORE, Division.
Right, CORE, RCC. Tammy Mackey, CORE.
So, Dave Wills, could you hear us, all of us?
It got a little faint as you went around the backside, and I missed a few names, but it's probably the usual faces.
Yeah, it's just that this is a very large room, and it's got a lot of speaker phones dangling from the ceiling and speakers on the floor, or microphones, I guess. So...
have everybody not be shy.
All right. We'll do our best. So in reviewing the agenda, any comments on July's minutes? No? Anything to add on the agenda for the day?
Got a little minor thing under the Lamprey updates. Freshwaters Illustrated. Jeremy Monroe wants to do some filming at Bonneville at night. The Lamprey.
All right, so We'll put that on there in Lamprey Updates, page 2 of 9. Thank you.
Yeah.
Finally. It's taken, what, 6 years?
agenda item on home abuse, just to talk about how we operate there at this time of year. There's differences in the FOP and the identifier.
Where do you want to put that in? Updates or BPA update?
Either there or coordination. Yeah, BPA updates.
So we'll go BPA updates at 3.8.
After 10, we have Marcus was going to call in from the project, so someplace not at the beginning.
I got all day.
Okay. Gary, what do you got?
Just one other thing I want to talk about a little bit for Bonneville. The issue was trash track repair, which is ongoing. I think that's not a problem. But we were talking about sensory operation and when you can't operate the first two chains. And we might want to come up with some language in the fish passage plan. So that's maybe something for another meeting, not for this one, but I might want to develop some language that if the chain gates and one or two are out, then where you go.
Chris Penny. Has joined the conference.
What I'd like to do is get some idea of the flow restrictions that we would have. We know that running.
Okay. Dave Wills, could you hear Gary talking?
I caught some of it, but not all of it. He kind of went up and down in the
Yeah,
intensity there for his voice.
This thing might not even be operating. Hopefully, Tom will show up. Yeah.
Do you want to come back to the table?
Yeah. Maybe you guys could come squeeze down a little. Everybody move down.
Do the best you can. I understand. I'm not there in person, so I will muddle through.
Well, just ask. If somebody's saying something, ask.
Yeah.
They can repeat.
Okay.
Until we get this thing dialed in. Okay, anybody else want to add anything to the agenda? With that, let's get started with some action items from Walla Walla. There aren't any. Nice job. For,
We wanted a smooth start.
Yeah, so you just put it blank.
Bert, can we get one more item? Sorry, I'm jumping in here late. Tom Walsh is going to be here. He's running late. He's got an item about a number of large oversized surgeons that have been found dead in the Dallas pool last month. Got a few copies of the report here, over 25 fish.
Mm-hmm.
So Tom Morris would like to have a few minutes
with that when he gets
it.
Sure. I'll put that on the agenda.
Thank you.
Yep. Let's see. Where will we put that?
We have the John Day South Bladder Extended Outage.
Where is that?
Well, maybe under Lamprey.
Put it under other.
3.3.
We'll just put it at the end of the agenda here somewhere. Lamprey or sturgeon kills. And that's below John Day Pool and above the Dalles, correct?
Above, yeah.
Right. So that's interesting. We'll see. Well, we haven't tore any units, so maybe there's some. All right, so let's get started with the 2.2 action items for Portland. The first one is a pit tag detector, and we're going to kick that out till October. Jeff Fryer is going to have some drawings for us. 2.22 is the Bonneville Juvenile Monitoring Facility Separator Bar contract and subsampling. I've set up a meeting with Michelle DeHart and Russell Porter on the 16th, and we are going to discuss getting that condition subsampling put into their contract with Pacific States. However, the separator bar contract is going to be a competitive bid process, and we're still working on getting that out the door through our contracting office. Tammy, do you know what's the status on that? I mean, we're still putting it together.
Diane is trying to find out. Of course, there's issues
because our contracting is coming to the end of the year and they're overwhelmed, but I mean, we have until March to get it out, so it should be going out for 30 days in the fall. And that's to monitor the separator bars in the evening hours. So that's all I have for that. Any questions?
No news on whether it'll be a small business set aside or anything like that?
No news on that. We're still waiting to hear back from our contracting office.
Okay.
Normally what you do is you put it out for a market survey, and if we have three small businesses interested in bidding on it, then it gets determined to be a small business set aside.
Oh, I see. Okay. So it depends on who is interested.
Correct.
Okay.
And then from that market survey, they determine what kind of contract it'll be, and then they'll put it out. So.
Okay.
And I'm not even sure they're going to do that yet. Like, do a market survey. They might just put it out competitive bid. Tammy's been working on it for a long time, and then all of a sudden there's this people going on leave, maternity leave, and it's like, what happened to the, it's called a SCAR, and it's, you haven't submitted it, basically, and we have submitted it months ago, so it's not, I don't know. So, Tammy's on it.
Okay.
On the job.
Good luck, Tammy.
Yeah. 2.2.3 is the Bonneville kelp monitoring. The FFU developed a, it was an attachment. I don't know if you've had time to look at that, but a at least a proposal on how we're going to do that video monitoring. You want to talk a little bit about it, Stancy? Mm-hmm. It's basically doing what we did before.
Yep.
So, if you have, you know, take a look at it, and we'll bring it back next time and see if there's any issues or questions.
One question I had about it was there, I think it turned probably the fish passage plant, as soon as the trigger reached, I think it was 90 minutes supposed to be open up. Historically,
if
that hasn't happened, is that a major issue or not? Well, yeah, and what I'm proposing actually is more of a 24 hours. So, you know, the trigger was met in previous, sometimes 24 hours, so we're not going to be within an hour of the trigger.
What I read in there was that it's actually been asked for more information.
That's up to House Henry. If not, it's going to be our fault.
Well, is this the separator monitoring contract, or is this something else? It'll
probably be one of the core staff.
That's monitoring. How is that?
The video.
That's what we need to talk about, because what I saw as far as the methodology seemed fine, but there's, I was a little worried about if it's going to monitor personnel, then is there going to be an issue with that, you know, as far as so there is a transaction, period, interaction, period, whatever, between the monitors and that person.
Right. And when it just seems at a practical level, that 1 hour hasn't been achieved, possibly there's some room to make that more flexible in the guidance.
When does that have to achieve? I don't know why it wouldn't be. I mean, just call the operator.
Just to walk out of the
powerhouse and push the button.
I sent back to me with Captain Patrick. That's not a cheat because that's just a lack of notification.
Yeah. It's not the project. I mean,
there's Lors.
So I think the language is meant to be once we realize that we've reached the trigger, then, because if we don't know that we hit the trigger, we can't open.
I don't want this thing being, we'll meet in 3 or 4 days if we're going to push a button.
No.
We've got to have some.
Right now the intent is to read the previous 24 hours. So it wouldn't be any longer than whatever it's been during that time period. And we could be notifying the sample personnel that, hey, we're getting close, so if you see it while you're standing on the separator, go ahead and make a call. I mean, hopefully we can work with them.
I would hope so.
Yeah, and I mean, we could probably put something in the separator bar contract as well. That's part of that. They're there looking at fish, whoever it is.
The concern of the past was you wanted the corn blade.
Hey, Tom, can you make the acoustics in this room work? Is there any button suppressed to make, you know, I can't hear anybody.
A filter. We need a filter.
Yeah. I mean, this is it? Is there any power or anything?
There's power up there. It's, the mics are picking up. It's just not.
There's no speakers.
I
just want to be able to hear. I can't hear these guys.
I didn't hear it, so I just, I saw.
So.
No, my fault.
What?
The softener can hold.
Yeah. Okay. So that's an issue. I thought it probably would be. So that, we just need to hammer out that, you know, the method is fine. The trigger is fine. What we need to measure or work out is how we go from reading the trigger, meeting it, or seeing it to actually implement. And, you know, kind of delay. I just need to see this. I don't want to see this delay that much.
Whoa!
No, I'm
serious.
That
was not.
It wasn't intended to be.
Okay, so why don't we just screw it all and just won't do anything? Is that
I'm not saying that, Tom. I'm just saying we're now going to the point where we're absolutely never going to miss a fish.
We're actually going to do what we intend to do accurately.
We factored in originally that we were going to miss fish.
Did you factor that in? Was that factored in your analysis?
We had humans and we went to a cow.
That was his analysis.
It was my analysis.
This is analysis. His analysis was not based on inaccuracy. It was based on numbers.
It was based on the best we had at the time. Exactly. It wasn't the best, and it's nice to have better. So we accurately measure when we hit these triggers. The trigger was based on abundance and our concern for stealing it, not on inaccuracy.
But the abundance was based on the humans measuring them over time.
It was also based on our team. It was also based on our team, which is inaccurate.
Is BPA going to raise an issue with this?
No, we just need to work it all out.
The 2320 is okay.
As far as I know,
that. Okay. That's all I want to know. It's okay that we'll work out the methods of implementation. You know, it's whatever's doable. Whatever's reasonable, doable.
So, do you want that included in this proposal?
Which means I don't want Robert out there every day. Ahead of time.
Away from this thing.
Right. Right. Okay, so I guess for now, read it, and then we'll talk about, you know, provide comments, and we'll refine this and bring it back next month.
Yeah, so it's that implementation period.
Right.
We'll work on that. Tell us what you can do. Yeah. What's reasonable? And
righty. Tom, how you doing?
Do you really want to go there?
Yeah.
After 2 weeks of Lord Granite.
You got anything else you want to throw on the table here? Okay, let's go to our next favorite topic, the AFF Morts. We're looking into the potential of installing cameras. Anybody know where we're at on that? I haven't heard a thing. AFF mortality and cameras and...
AFF?
AFF, yeah. John's sick today. He's got a fever. Serious.
I had 68 jabs. 68.
That
was at 29 July. 26 Chinook, 10 Sockeye, 32 Mountains. I haven't, but I'd have to sit down and figure it out. It's mostly found to the drain. Particularly most of the lamprey. There were a few that were in there. There were a few that were found in the holding tank. Some died in the plume that goes into the ancillary tank. Those were mostly jack-sized fish. But yeah, I haven't got the last. And I haven't included things that died outside, like lamprey anemones, things like that. This is just in the facility, either on the drain or on the boat.
What's a normal year?
I think we haven't, because this is a different method of actually accounting for this. So this is just maybe more the truth that we haven't seen in the past. What the cause is. If I was a lamprey person, I'd be concerned. I realize you run the trap to get fish up to the collect to the to the trap. You have to get fish up to the trap, but losing 32 fish to gain, that was about 700.
You had 2,000.
2,000? Not 1,000. Yeah, so, it's a cost of doing business, I guess.
And that was from economists. A part of my task was to take this to the Lamprey Board to talk about raising the picket fees. I guess something was a potential solution to try to get Lamprey past that area. And I think their feedback is sort of in the notes there. But essentially, one of the concerns is, well, you're collecting research fish and tribal fish through transportation programs. Get that.
I mean, you lose that, so is that...
Here's the same thing. I don't know if we would or not. Because I don't know if those fish are coming from up here or downstream.
When you say down upstream, you mean falling back in?
Yeah.
That's cool. And so I was talking to Sam about this. We have other locations as well. It's starting to go fish. Cascades out of the ladder with the fish traps. Washington Shoulder, collecting fish. I think from our perspective, we'd like to do it as a strictly a fish health issue.
From the research perspective, I know that they like a consistent collection location, so they compare from year to year to year. Fish have been at that point, the fish may have had a similar experience as a fish.
Just experience and not numbers, because this would change numbers. If you just change the pickup limits, you still get it will affect the numbers.
Right. So are they using all the available fish right now for the application of research that comes through the facility? The researchers typically like to collect their fish from the traditional sites, primarily the upper trap, the local facility, because that's like the best option. Absolutely. No, but I'm saying is all the fish that come through the facility, are they using every single one for research or for translocation? Are they a few go? They only collect fish via traps. So whether it's a barrel trap or a side trap, they're not like coming down to shoot and reverting land, right? They don't jump from the barrel pool to the shoots.
So they could add traps and then increase their efficiency in there.
Well, there's another in the downstream trap in Hamlet, very similar. They don't even fish. CPU is so low. Now, we're not catching fish, so you obviously start fishing more traps, even with low CPU leads.
You still have to ask a question. If this thing wasn't running the way it is, would these fish have done it?
Yeah, we don't know. Is it collecting dead fish or killing fish?
Right. So,
resurfacing your section above the cabin windows, the tourist is a good full spot for that.
Well, there have been more in general, it seems, this year, and so
I keep hearing people say that's not true, that we just are doing a fair job. Ray County has been way things been set up, so.
Yeah, especially when they have removed
at the AFF, yeah.
Yeah, there's a large piece of plywood in there, right, so what was it? I don't know, okay, what part of the portion of Grizzly Grand just think they couldn't see prior to the agreement?
That's pretty small. It's just, yeah, but I mean, it's a corner, so there's, you know, possible. And by their own admission, doing a better job of getting all the way down to the platform trash, right? So, I mean, if their efforts changed, now they have more access.
That baffles me a big difference.
Yeah.
Access is too. So, and I mean, simple effort is.
And right. Then you go back to less than a year.
Right.
Those guys weren't recording just that they themselves didn't kill us, but they're just not the animal that we didn't hear about.
So, do we make changes now to the AFF, or do we do it another year and see if it's the same kind of numbers, or what? I mean, what's the plan with the AFF?
John, healthy, and then talk to Fairway about that, so lessons learned, the AFF mods, find out what we did, what we think was right, what other modifications, if any, need to be made. And that's what
we're doing. He would like to know when you want to meet to discuss that.
Sooner or later. I don't want to wait until I call out in February and say, hey, it's Mickey's Mall.
Does next week work?
Next week?
Wait. This week? That's a little sooner than normal. Usually get her 3 weeks out.
Maybe about 4:30 in the afternoon someday?
On Friday.
His concern was if we waited too long, we wouldn't be able to get a contract in place if we needed to.
Yeah. No, I'm just thinking, I want it to.
Yeah.
In the winter.
In the winter time. By March 1st.
By April 1st.
April.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we can talk your issue later on in the agenda, but I just want to kind of close this out. Okay. Yeah, we can come back as soon as he gets on. We'll just go to item 3 updates. Walla Walla's got 311 McNary model.
Okay. I think Carl's here to talk a little bit and about how we've been using results of the model, and I'll just give you a little bit of background. Randy, I believe, has probably talked to most of you guys in SCT. We've been in an effort since last fall trying to get Mike Snyder to complete the model. Made some progress here about a month ago, maybe a month and a half ago. I was finally able to get a hold of him on the phone. Mike put some effort in, but then after the last meeting, which I wasn't at, there was a due out for us to again contact, see if we could get something in writing, and
Edmar has joined the conference.
Made that contact with Randy, who is kind of the direct funding contact on this. I saw the email, I was CC'd, and we have had no interaction from that end. So with that, I think you can ask questions of that, and I'll be happy to answer how that's going. But Carl and Bobby last year went through an orientation with Mike and some of us just locally, and it wasn't anything that you guys haven't been exposed to before. That said, the improvements we were hoping to make were to facilitate the project being able to just like push one button and have a lot of this information update that we rely on Mike to do in a timely manner. So right now, if Carl or Bobby wants to run the model, they really have, and they want it updated, they really have to call Mike. On the other hand, the model has largely suggested one avenue, and that avenue was written into the Fish Passage Plan last year. And so that's what Carl can describe it, but that's how Bobby and Carl have been operating. And so really, while the model is nice, and we do want to get it finished so that everyone can view it and understand what I just told you, I really just summarized it. It really suggests that there's the one pattern and this fell out of the 2009 mortality, the sawtooth pattern that should be followed as closely as possible. And beyond that, you know, you're kind of at held captive by environmental conditions, i.e. wind, and some of the solar radiation that's taking place. So maybe here's just a good spot to let Carl have a little say.
Sure. The thing, main thing you remember, this year was not the acid test. We've had pretty mild conditions. Every time it got hot, the wind came up. Every time the wind came down, temperatures cooled down. So we've partly been lucky, but the model may have actually saved some fish this year. We've had to work around so many things because we've had typically three units down all the time. Like right now, 4 and 11 and 3 are all down. 4 and 11 will be down until January for rewinding. 3 will be down about another month. We're hoping they'll have that back up. Having some very work done on it. But we've had to work around that. We had to work around the Doble test. We've had to work around the RAS testing. I wish that testing could be arranged for another time of year instead of right in the middle of the hot season. But that was the luck of the draw. But we are able to work those tests around the sawtooth pattern. The pattern had some big wide gaps. It wasn't like every other unit lots of times because we couldn't the way it was configured. There were certain constraints. You basically need to keep unit one running all the time because it feeds the intake, south intake, the Dorian ladder. It's attraction water for that. But there are so many constraints on it, so we wound up kind of with sawtooth pattern with big gaps in the teeth. Bigger gaps than we would have liked, but it was so successful, we're almost wondering now, maybe the model needs bigger gaps, you know, that's kind of what's going through our mind right now. So this is really, really experimental, and until we get a good acid test year, we're not really going to know. We get good temperature, Rosanna's crew gives us really good temperature data every other day to get the 24-hour sample, you know, so, or actually every day coming in there, but It's a day old by the time we get it, basically, because it's downloading stuff. So you're not working real time. It'd be really cool if we had live monitors in every gate well and in the forebay. Maybe that's a future project that requires some pretty fancy electronics, but I think it can be done. And it'd really be fun to have that information real time because you could just sit there and watch the board and manage the whole thing. But as it is right now, there's a lot of guesswork involved. Dealing with the old data already.
So Mike's model does incorporate some of the forecasts for weather, and generally you can look out 2 or 3 days and get a feel for what to expect a little. And so there is some. I think it would be timely when we can get it completed and usable. Right now, where it's at, he has it so that a lot of the things rely on being within our network to access the database, etc. If we want that to be available to parties outside, he's going to have to spend some time and work on it and kind of come back.
What parties outside?
Well, like yourself, if you wanted to.
I don't.
Okay.
what I would like to have is a maybe it's already there. I was going to check this morning. Fish passage from that and making sure that we have an update every year of the methods that you guys are using in the projects to do this.
I would say that we did do an update last year, and we had an internal call maybe late June, and we talked about what was in the fish passage plan, and people, everybody became aware then that there was like five, you know, following criteria. When any of these occur, you could start, any of these five criteria, you could start the sawtooth as kind of a mitigative effort to not have any further issues. And at that point in time, I believe we were we over 68 degrees?
Yeah, I'm sure we were.
Which is one of the criteria.
Yeah, we've kind of learned not to push the panic button every time you get a little spike in temperature because you could actually wind up doing more harm than good. It's kind of, you know, general, what's his name, in the Arab War said that sometimes the best thing is to do nothing, you know. And that's has a lot to do with managing for temperature. Sometimes you gotta be careful not to just jump in there and start doing things. We don't really have a real good understanding.
But let me read you the five things we put in last year. Okay, so turbine operations during periods of warm water will begin when any of the following criteria occur. water temperatures in the McNary JFF greater than 68 degrees.
Right. No, I know those.
Okay, so.
I just didn't see the model as part of that.
So you would, your suggestion would be for 2014 that we do an FPP change to try to incorporate a little bit more information related to model
so how
output.
How do you use the model? That's all. I just want to understand that better, or not.
So right now, not having anything in the FPP and not having the model be quite synced totally, for 2013, we haven't used the model, but what we've done is use what we wrote in the FPP, which was the output suggestion we've gotten from the model the last 2 years that we've run the model. So it's a generalized the model would be able to give us more specifics, although if the wind stops blowing, we're already running a sawtooth pattern.
If
we don't have much else we can do.
A waste of time, then there you go. I mean, you've got an operation. I just want to make sure that we fully utilized that model. I just didn't like the idea. It seemed like it was just sitting out there. Having been developed to the point that project guys could actually use it. I wanted to make sure that if it was something that they thought was useful to have, that we didn't just let it sit if they had it. If they feel that they don't need it because the operations that they have and the way that they're operating is sufficient, then let's say that.
Well, where it would come in is
if
they're operating based on the output and we start to have an issue and people want to understand
has joined the conference.
The background of where we're at that particular season, this model will pull that out. And so one of the things that he doesn't have working is just pit tag, going to the Pitagus and you know, giving us kind of where we are in the run versus other years and things like that. So it's going to be useful if we get into a situation where going ahead, as we are right now, we're still not getting the control we'd like, and people want to understand the potential ramifications of, you know, this year, where are we at with maybe a run or something like that. The model will provide some additional information to us. Not to say that somebody else is, well, it will.
I'm not quite sure how temperature models should be used as a run model.
Right.
The main thing is we got to remember, when we set up was like, we recognize when there's problems. Like, you guys have a bunch of units out or something like that, and we'll talk about time frames. The main reason we want to touch them all is like, if we have to take some units out or something like that, is there a way we can operate smartly if it doesn't have a temperature right now? It doesn't sound like you guys are going to use the model in that fashion. It's more of a real-time thing. Hey, we've got 5 units coming down. If we have to schedule some units out, what would be the best schedule from a temperature standpoint? It doesn't sound like you guys can do that in real-time unless you have Mike's management model. Now, the question is that something you guys think that should be important? And that's where the question really needs to come up with. Do we need to do that model in that fashion? Are we going about right now at a time?
I think the model could really become useful if you have a little time. Did any other project, I don't think anybody even has that, but
no,
I can see where it would come in really handy.
Because
it changes really fast. You watch those temperature profiles over the course of the day, and it's amazing how fast everything changes down, right?
Well, I mean, and you guys are watching that, so you guys are the ones that call the shots in as far as I'm concerned. I just want to make sure that we have the tools so we can do that. And if we don't, then we need to go out and make sure we get it. So, that was the whole thing.
It would help them to plan, you know, because it gives you a couple days out in terms of the forecast. They're working kind of day to day, and as Carl said, on some data that's a day old. If they see that they're going into a period of no wind and 105 degree temperatures, you know, from a cautionary standpoint, you know, they might talk to Rosanna about sampling level, you know, densities of holding. There's some little things that you can do in terms of major things. It's somewhat limited, but you know, yeah, they can at least consider that with any fish handling that's going to occur, or maybe none should occur. You know, kind of.
There's that issue. There's also a bunch of channel temperatures, thermal shock issues.
And that's what the sawtooth pattern is dealing with, is the thermal shock issue and temperature differentials.
I recognize that. I just didn't know if there was a better. As Tom says, you know, as your units go down, up and down, you have those issues, can you consult the model with these temperatures that you have and make better choices about how you work about it? That's what, you know, from a unit operation standpoint, as well as from a
I think Carl has been doing that on a common sense standpoint, but what we want the model there for is for the future, and, you know, Carl's here now for the next 5 or 10 years, but we don't know what happens. The next 2 years, okay, well, we don't know. When Carl walks out the door, we'd like to be able to have a tool for whoever walks in behind him to understand the common sense. And so there's some value there.
Write it down. You know, let's make sure that even if it has to be, McNair is unusual, we all know that, so this isn't applied to all the other projects, but with that one, even appendix, gives a little better definition of how that project operates.
Okay, so we'll just have that as a do-out. We'll try to work with Mike.
Identifying weaknesses and things that we need to work on, that would be really useful.
McNair actually has a lot of a history with software model, because we had that die-off in 2009, and we went to the South Sawtooth model. The die-off stopped. The temperatures kept going up in the next week. I don't know if you watched the temperature graph on that, but it kept going up, but it stopped it. It stopped killing. So it may have been a coincidence, but it was kind of convincing coincidence.
Okay, well, let's go back to setting up that meeting, because Ed called in. So, Ed, we're setting up a Fitterwig meeting to talk about AFF mods, and we want to do it as soon as possible.
Okay.
So, pull up your calendar and tell us what your calendar looks like maybe in the next 2 weeks out.
What are we looking for, a day?
No, probably at least a day or half a day.
Yeah.
We could do the 20th, Tuesday the 20th.
How does that look for you guys? Tuesday the 20th.
Let me
call
John.
You never bring your calendar. We're going to have to get you a BlackBerry. Yeah, I think Fredericks needs one.
Well, I won't be going through Tuesday, but there's plenty of people out there that are infinitely more in tune with the FF and the also thing.
Okay, is Mirisich available?
It appears to be.
Okay, looks like Tuesday the 20th is a tentative right now, but I'll have John send out an invite and just go ahead and mark that in your calendar, Ed.
Okay. Got it.
Thanks. All right, so let's move on to 312 McNary sampling without transport.
Okay. Basically, 2 months ago at a meeting, I brought this topic up. Then I believe I exchanged a couple emails afterwards with Dave Benner asking questions. In the interim, I went out to each of the projects, not just Walla Walla, but also Portland, and asked the project bios just their use on a 24-hour time frame per day when they're collecting fish of oversight. And I really found only one example, late season at Lomo, where people were comfortable that their facility and the sensors were reliable enough where they didn't have biotechs. So where I was going when I introduced this was, as we look forward without transport potentially at McNary, what does that do to sampling, and should there be some changes there? I think now where I'm at is would like to ask those of you in the region that rely on that data to take a look and see if there is a better way, particularly during the warm weather periods, to be more efficient and perhaps limit the amount of time and either handling and or holding time at the facility so that we don't have a lot of fish and raceways for, you know, 20 hours that we sample and we get the fish back out in the river. It just makes sense at this point in time, although I understand that there's some conflicts there. Had a call from Rosanna a couple days ago, and One of the suggestions that had come up, I believe it was from Bobby, the assistant out there, is maybe you should go to like an 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. because then after the fish recover from anesthetic, you can release them back to the river. Rosanna's comment to me was, well, not really, how does GBT get done then? Do they come in at 4 a.m. and do GBT? Well, you know, obviously that doesn't solve that problem, but I think what I'd like to do is, and then I also had a discussion with Margaret Filardo on this, and she was willing that we kick this back towards FPAC to talk about and come up with some recommendations if there are any things that would still meet the needs, but also looking towards efficiency, because that's what we'll be doing. Our process will be internally as we move forward through the fall. We'll be starting at the end of September, starting to have discussions about the facility and, you know, just where do we go from here if we're not going to transport any longer. As well, we're aware that there are some other needs out in the region for water and fish facilities. So about 2 weeks ago, I was at a meeting out at Dorshack, and the Nez Perce tribe has been looking for a permanent location for their kelp facilities. They're doing a master planning process right now with BPA and did make them aware of the potential that we're going to have a facility there, raceways and water, that maybe they want to have on their master plan for consideration. So I don't know, you know, I'm just going to let you know that we're going to be talking about looking for efficiencies. We're not sure what we're going to find with the need for 24-hour biotechs right now, particularly McNary being an older facility, the reliability of our dewatering system and some of the sensors. We have to have someone there so that we avert any potential big mortality incidences. I think we will in the future always be looking and starting to try to undertake some of the major maintenance to get some of these elements more reliable, but that's years out at this point in time. And so the path forward right now is we will have biotechs on site. But my question to you folks is there a better way as we move into the future to do the condition sampling and minimize both handling and holding, particularly during the warm weather?
What we have been doing is letting the fish go basically as soon as we're done with them, even the gas bubble fish. We no longer hold them, but we give them just long enough to recover from the anesthetic and they're out the door. And we found that that reduces mortalities because these are already fish that have been stressed to the max. And then handled the gas and everything else, you know. So, and then the sample fish, again, same type of situation. Those are generally finishes by 10 or 10:30, something like that, roughly. And not too long after that, we let it out the door. We don't hold them for very long anymore. It's just too risky. Yeah, the gas bubble fish, we used to, you know, not do that, but we were starting to get mortalities, and we think that that's probably.
So I guess with that in mind, the question that came up at the last meeting that kept us moving then was, are you using the numbers rather than just the condition sampling that mandates that you still collect over a given period to keep it appropriate with your use of the data? And I don't think I ever really got an answer back.
I have something I haven't been able to, apologize for not getting it to you yet, but we kind of been like shifting past it in the dark. I have a week's worth of data here that we took just from July 22nd through August 3rd, seven sample days every other day, so it's basically 2 weeks worth of data. And the average mortality for that sample period on most days was 0.5%, pretty darn low. But there's one day it was 4.2, another day it was 5.9. And if we're going to go to where we're not sampling every one day like that, you're probably, you could catch one or both those spikes and I would have a real picture of what's going on. So we just think it's really important to keep a hand on. I don't know how often at this point you should be sampling. We like the idea of what we're doing right now. The thing that Neri is unique in a lot of ways, but with the first dam down from Snake, but we're also getting everything that's coming down to Columbia. And by the time you get John down to John Day, everything's changed. It's 76 miles down the road. Actually, it goes a little farther. The river's 76 miles.
And they're sampling down there. I think you're just sampling twice a week now, aren't you?
Monday.
Are you comfortable with that, or do you wish you had more going on than that at this point in time?
Condition 100 fish each day only.
Yeah, and that, so I think that's the other thing, is that in the spring, most of our other Snake River facilities have gone to something more like a two-day-a-week, and I, you know, McNary hasn't, and I guess that's just kind of something to think about out there. You know, we put, you know, I remember back in the late 90s putting in the flow-through pit detector saying, yeah, we're going to make some changes, now we're going to handle less fish. We've never got there, but...
You're down to 2 days a week for temperature. That's the temperature.
About 70 degrees.
So that's different.
Normal sampling is 24 hours, 7 days
a
week.
So if you're talking about condition sampling that's minimal, under normal conditions, that's different than what John Day's doing. That's a temperature regulation issue.
So, well, that's... Anyway, that's kind of the question out, is that, you know, when we're not transporting in the Snake early in the season now, Little Goose and I believe Lomo, they've greatly reduced the amount of sampling that they're doing. We haven't yet to make any changes at McNary, even though we've gradually been moving on this path. And so the question is, should we or do we want to leave it? I mean,
no, there's two questions. There's three issues. One is smoke monitoring.
Right.
That's a daily. Or it could be every other day, as long as we're willing to take that.
Right now, it's every other day.
And that's fine. You know, or it could be every week, if that's all we care about. But smoke monitoring, there's condition monitoring at the project, and then there's the operations that are restricted by temperature, which restricts both things.
Right.
So there's three things on the table. And I think what you're asking is, what are we comfortable with in terms of condition project to feel that we would catch a problem if one should arise?
Yep.
That's a different question. A little different than what Merle is working with right now. And we've typically been good with every other day or three times a week sort of approach on that. It's not quite every other day. And I realize that causes all kinds of problems with scheduling people and stuff. That's something I've struggled with over the years several times. Personally, I'm comfortable with every other day or even three times a week.
A participant has joined the conference.
This whole monitor is more of an habitat question. 3 days a week, condition, that's it.
So what I'm hearing is there is a difference between just sampling 100 fish just to see if they're injured or not, and actually monitoring whole facility, especially when we, you know, so you can kind of correlate, well, on the 25th, were we turning a unit on or off at 4 in the afternoon when we shouldn't have, when we saw this spike? If we hadn't been collecting for that full 24 hours before that, we wouldn't have seen what we saw. And monitoring also verifies the fact that the model works. We're not seeing mortality. We're collecting for a full 24-hour period, and we're verifying that the system is working, that the model's working.
So we have to argue, or we have to discuss, I guess, is the value of that, because that's a lot more intensive, a lot more fish to handle over the time.
We can collect, you know, right at the moment, we're at like 5%, but we can only collect, you know, 200 fish, you know, spread it out over the 24-hour period, so at least you have a small piece from every hour. You know, I can minimize the number that we look at.
I thought the justification for monitoring was slightly different the way I was explained out in the past, that we have the basic requirement, which is condition sampling, and then there's index sampling, which is biological value. That's what's monitoring.
Yeah, she didn't monitor.
Because the monitoring of the project, I don't think there's that tight correlation with the daily operations. I think it's a spot check. In fact, I think Gary kind of implied that in the past. As far as I'm concerned, the system doesn't change that quickly. So even 1 hour collecting that 100 fish, like we do actually have 7 through 1 o'clock this time of year. it could be actually shorter because it's a snapshot. And that accomplishes the conditions and monitoring of the facility. But then there is some other biological right. goals with the data well. Pertinent to the migration of the juveniles.
Right. And for John Day, I think that's appropriate.
Very, very good. Awesome. Yeah. We were able to link two events to those two spikes, too. The one was, like Rosanna mentioned, control room. I don't know what they were thinking. They weren't reading the fish passage plan. It started up 2 units, like between 4 o'clock and 6 o'clock. That's the worst time of day you can start units. Yeah. If someone who's supposed to pay attention, a few people got chewed over that one. And second, the second event, we think, may have had to do, I think WDFW had some data on this in the past, when we raised the pool for the hybrid races at Tri-Cities there, again, there was a spike associated with that. And there's past evidence, apparently, that I think you're putting the water up into the shallows and stuff like that, or the water. I don't know exactly what the mechanism is, but it seems to be associated with high mortality rates in the past. So we're thinking of calling up the hydro people so they can move the races back a little.
Yeah,
I
want guys.
Okay, I didn't quite understand that the McNair is so different. It's more complex, I guess.
It is, yeah. I don't think we're arguing for
we don't see that.
We've got that big shallow shelf out front, too, that most people don't have to deal with. That probably causes numbers.
You know, that's a temperature issue. And I'd say you probably don't. You could probably be more like John Day in the spring. But as you get through June, we maybe want to be in more kind of more detail. And I don't know that doesn't help either when you try to set up schedules for people.
Yeah. You know, the fish don't show up till 5, so my GBT gal, if she comes in at 3 in the morning, she's going to be doing nothing. You know, the fish don't even show up until 5 o'clock, so, you know.
If you're sampling from 11 p.m. till like 7-2, you're not going to catch, like, you wouldn't have caught that spike with the turbine spike.
No, you wouldn't have. You wouldn't have.
We could probably spend a few hours talking to this one. Just probably
should. Right.
Well, no, I would just like to ask that FPAC at least have a brief conversation if they have any suggestions that they want to bring back to FPOM in terms of recommendations for us to consider.
What you're talking about for FPAC really should be a discussion about indexing.
Right.
So if that's part of, if that's what you're saying.
I think it is. You know, the condition, like you say, can be discussed here, but
yeah, so.
I've also asked the question of, you know, probably 6 or 8 years ago, their key indexing sites were Lower Granite, McNairy, and Bonneville. You know, do they still rely on that, or is there enough historic data that with the condition sampling that, you know, those are just some larger questions, and it, I don't know, Margaret was open to at least stepping back, looking at their current program and asking a few questions. If you come back with the same thing and that's what you feel you want to do, then that's what you will do. But, you know, just as an effort to streamline, you know, that's what we're going to be trying to do as we look at McNairy into the future.
Yeah. It'll play into some other things that we're doing on the CLTAC team projects because
that's something from an FPP standpoint we could look at as we move forward. Let these guys come back with what they're going to do, but if we want to put some guidelines similar to John Day or whatever during certain times of the year, we don't want them handling more than 100 fish a day or whatever, we can write that into the fish passage plan so it's clear.
How are you in there?
What's that?
Somebody on the phone want to say something?
Well, that's already in there, that warm water temperature protocol and fish numbers, sample size.
For John Day and Bonneville, is it in there for McNairy?
I don't know about McNairy for sure.
Right. Since we started, we had a couple people join. Can you identify yourselves?
Yeah, this is Marcus Smith, Chief of Operations at Little Goose Lock and Dam.
Marcus.
Agnes from Bonneville.
Hi, Agnes.
Hello.
Okay.
So we're done with that topic.
Okay, let's move on to the next one, 313, Ice Harbor.
Yeah, and I think this was on the agenda. This is something that I believe Ken brought to the last meeting. It got turned down, and so just wanted to let people know that the path forward is the project is going to try to revise this and resubmit it for later in the fall. So pretty much just a notification there.
Okay.
Next one, 3.14. As Tom alluded to, there's been a lot of data transfer up through TMT related to adult fish passage and the warm temperatures that we've had both in the ladder and the forebay at Lower Granite. In terms of an overview, we haven't sent out a lot to FPOM. I know I sent out one where there was a number, there was a typo in that, so I'll apologize for that. But basically, for people that haven't been on all the, this went to the Water Management Forum, TMT, and that's where this has been discussed extensively. With some recommendations coming back weekly or biweekly from FPAC for core Bonneville to consider for implementation. Basically, the nuts and bolts of it were that during early that first week, Russ came, Sockeye Passage appeared to be blocked. I believe it was Friday the 19th, about 3 in the afternoon. We started some discussions. We didn't do anything over the weekend to see if there was any self-correction, and then the first of that week started having some calls. And by Friday the next week, we still weren't really successful getting adult passage reliably moving. But we had a call on Wednesday. Chris Pinney, who I heard join the call, went back to a design document for Lower Granite. It was a report that had come out in 2011 with some recommendations for things that might give us a better benefit. Mitigate for the warm temperatures. None of that has ever been pursued or implemented. I think that's a place where Dave Wills spoke up that it was time for some of the agencies to take a stronger stance and move forward, and I think they discussed doing that via the SCT. In the meantime, the Corps internally, we've also worked with Darren, who operates the trap, and we intend to put together a manual that outlines just briefly some of the design constraints, et cetera, over this winter period so that the knowledge of emergency pumps at the top end of the ladder is not forgotten. So what Chris brought in on that Friday 26th, late in the day, was the ability to operate, or maybe it was that Wednesday, the ability to operate emergency pumps that hadn't been operated since the 1992 drawdown. And basically, it really was not anybody's radar at that point in time. So he dug out that design report. He'd been on the PDT, and you know, we were very appreciative for that input, as well as the region has thanked him. We have been operating those pumps continuously. The major changes we've been making is in unit operation, and that's where TMT has weighed in with the region and FPAC recommendations. At this point, on Saturday the 10th, we go to the powerhouse roof repair up there, where we go to Unit 5 as station service. Everything else goes to spill. So the ability to manipulate powerhouse units, which is what we've been doing the last week or so, will not be there. Although we seem to be having, I would say, reasonable success with ongoing passage. We don't see big numbers of sockeye any day. It seems like we'll have a couple low days, and then we'll have a day that's a little bigger, you know.
Carolyn Schneider has joined the conference.
It may go up to 7 or 8, you know, for a day and then drop back. But we're seeing some pretty good numbers of wild steelhead, also seeing some Chinook moving up. So, you know, we feel that based on this year with the warm, very warm air temperatures that we're having and the lower flows, that this was a good mitigation, and it seems to be all we have at the project at this time that we can implement other than what we've gone out and talked about in TMT with unit operations. So I think the path forward here is that we do need to somehow decide, and this will be discussed number one at SCT in terms of how important it is for funding, but the frequency of what we expect this. And you know, a lot of the decisions in the past, if we think that something's only going to happen once every 15 years, no money gets allotted to it. You know, it's kind of an outlier point, and we move on. It's not really clear that this year is any more than an outlier point, although certainly it's very clear that we have a problem in a year like this. So there's two strategies there. There's the items that were identified in the design report, and or there's the possibility that we could, you know, have something out there making a request for something that was a little bit more stepped down that could be implementable at the project level in a timely manner as well. And that would take some design work, that would take some funding as well. So I think big picture, the Corps needs to be receiving input from all of the regional players on the prioritization for this. You know, yes, it was important this year. In the big picture, as we look long term and make decisions about what's the most important thing for some of these programs to be looking at as funding's available, you need to weigh it against the other projects that are out there and make your recommendations. And I think with that, it's kind of a broad overview. If I've left anything out for folks that haven't been part of it, I'd be happy to try to answer some questions.
One question. You have one right now fixed in it. What is the schedule for that? Is it going to be treasury capital ever in my lifetime? Or will
you... Yes, and the project, would like to get it returned sooner rather than later. Right now, it's maybe a large cap project, and I don't know if Scott would have any more information than me, but... my impression is that either in 14 or 15, LOMO is scheduled to be brought back from fixed blade to a Kaplan. And I think one of the things we have to do out is we've heard, even at the project, very loudly that, they would like to get it back to a Kaplan. So that's an important message as we move forward to keep bringing up in forums as well, because some of the prioritization there, right now, Kerry Rand's our large cap guy, and he's been in this position for about 6 months, and so I don't totally know, as they go out and make a decision project to project, who's doing the overall prioritization. Are you any more familiar with that, Scott?
They rank which ones will and won't go back. That one will go back, it's probably not going to be in 8 years. And Ice Harbor design. Okay. Awesome.
Oh, so they're thinking of using the passage-friendly design rather than just the... So the other option, of course, which is probably the least ideal for all, for every party at some point, is like basically take the wells and blow the blades and then so you can operate a little volume. Right now, this is like 17 minus a small amount. And in both frontiers, that gets challenging. So the question is that something? I mean, first looking at either 8 year at earliest, or then basically going to dice up on low flow hot year, because that never happens again. So
that's kind of something that I think we need to get our operations staff and Bonneville both engaged in a discussion on. So,
but necessarily turning it down may not fix your problem.
You
maybe
need
the bottom boys.
Sometimes you might. What's the issue of going back to the basic linkage in kind just to keep it running as a Kaplan? I know there's a structural design flaw.
They're all going to get this point.
All the BLHs, I understand that. Get this thing going.
I think there was a rust issue or something that could
be done. Hold on. I need an update on that.
Okay.
Scott, I do understand, but I think you haven't seen this adult passage. We've had much higher flow meters. It's only been slow for 5 times, which is a problem. So that's going to be a problem. So that's not going to be a long range issue as much. So that's kind of where it's going to be. They'll throw the idea of the green field out there. It's at least until it's down to the ability that actually runs.
This is the first time we've had soft ice.
And the fact that won't happen just to see.
What used to work in that scale at all, that was.
never had this number of fish and this was the last time we found out.
They all did years prior.
Yeah, and that was like 200 sockeye. Well, this is the fish we actually had 1,000.
Yeah, it's unusual, but hopefully.
We're hoping the trend is fishy enough.
Yeah,
the trend for fish is there.
The other thing to remember is we also use Rorschach more than ever. Full cold water. So you get the 10 degree differentials. It's a lot of the X's somewhat.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Is there's a lot of pieces. The way we're operating, we've never had the problem of. Dvorak, the flows we've had in Dvorak, we've never seen this difference. So that has nothing to do with it.
Well, this is the flow.
This is the chest, which is a different.
This is the cold thing that has to run Dvorak. 3 years ago, we fixed the differential that we were having problems with the hatchery. We had the blood of warm water and cold water. We can now run all the way. And so that's what's a bit different. We used to keep a little bit warmer, so they didn't have to keep it.
But your differential is warmer. It's at 75 degrees. That's
just too hot. I get to do the race now.
Oh, I got to know.
I want to rewind back, Scott, to something you said. I disagree with it. I'm not convinced that spill has anything to do with adult passage of the powerhouse over granite. Furthermore, I really believe that running the RSW helps to cool the pore bay at Long Bay. So, first of all, I think that this, until we get the model built, the pore bay model, I think we can test some of these things. We can go back and forth. I'm using the old model, operating a relatively low spill valve that the spillway did not.
Is there a temperature model we can use to actually test that?
That's a good point.
What's that?
That's a good
point. Well, no.
Steve
Hall has a quality too. Is it 3D? I think it's only a two dimensional model.
It's only 2D, yeah.
So it doesn't study,
there's not a 3D.
It seems like that you could go back to before we had the oscillator, when we had some warm temperatures, right, when we weren't spilling anything. If the Dvorak was still putting out the cold water, you could see the rapid changes. It just seems like it's conjectural that once we started operating the RSW in the summertime, that we noticed, at least the last few years, anyway, that it was cooler. Water on the surface of the water.
We have a lot of changes. We need to kind of step back and figure out
Well, we need to look big picture when this model's built too at the effect of the RSW and the tail race, because nobody wanted to buy into that. We have some really strong visual cues to people that spend a lot of time at the project that when we were running Unit 2 there, that was a lower output than Unit 1, that we had quite an eddy that seemed to be a result of operating the RSW, so spinning off over on that side. I mean, it's a place where we historically, both granite and goose, had big eddies.
That's what I have trouble with.
I haven't worked
on the model, the old model, haven't worked on that. Yeah, you're not going to have as good a powerhouse conditions if you've been operating one. But operating unit two, I don't think you can blame the RSW, the spill over there, for reverse eddy at unit
two. Another difference was unit two is operating at like 11 kilokeys
per test. Right.
Unit one was operating at 17, so.
That's the key right
why
there.
Why would you run unit two so low?
Because you're trying to maintain spot.
So, yeah, to maintain the spill.
Well, I wasn't aware that you run unit two up as high as you can. If unit one is not available and you want better conditions over there.
Well, that wasn't something that the region was willing to go to. I mean, the region has wanted to maintain FOP spill as much as possible. And it's been quite controversial just to run unit one. And you're right. honestly, there are some unknowns here, but I think it's something that as we move to the future, we should look at, particularly if and when there is a model to look at circulation patterns to try to start better understanding.
There will be a model. The model will be probably ready in October or November. So this is what we can address.
Your scale is better than the model too.
This is going to be better.
But we can't get access to it until they work with the
data. No, I know.
And do you want to jump to Marcus's topic next?
Yeah, that would be handy if you could.
Okay.
Okay, I think with that, we are about ready to go to Little Goose. Just 3.15, juvenile transport, just a reminder that August 16th will be the first day of trucking, and barging will be finished. So with that, we have...
The 16th is the last barge, and the 18th will be the first day of trucking.
All right, thank you.
So with that, we'll move to...
Have left the conference.
Little Goose, and we have two things. Marcus Smith, Chief of Ops, is on the phone. We have a written coordination form for trying to reschedule the Doble testing. A request, this was sent out to you folks, and basically they're asking that this be rescheduled for September 9th to 12th. Essentially what it is a unit priority change to put Unit 5 and 6 as the first priority. Don't know if people had a problem with that. I guess right now, if you do, would be a good time to voice that so we can have some discussion.
I have a question on Unit 5. Is the annual maintenance going to occur that week, or are they going to
sour apple?
Marcus, can you answer that question?
It's really hard for me to hear the questions on the other end, so could you repeat, please?
A participant has joined the conference.
Unit 5 is scheduled for an annual that same week. Has that been postponed?
Yeah, I'm not sure how that got put on the schedule as far as that week, because that's not correct. Unit 6's annual is scheduled for, Unit 5's annual is scheduled for September 16th through October 3rd.
Okay. Originally, it probably was there because there was no problem. With Doble testing, it is a problem.
Absolutely, yeah. So, original schedule with the Doble testing for... August 5th through the 15th, and that would have been the schedule at that point. But then when BPA shut off our ability to do this Doble testing during that original time frame, I had to readjust some things. So that may be how that got on there.
It's not like we shut it off. There's a broken circuit breaker, so we can't
So I guess I'd like to hear from the reps that are here or else on the phone if anybody has a problem with that at this point in time. Would be preferable. That's obviously where we want to see this go.
Let me just understand again what you're planning.
Yep.
The 9th to the 12th of September, we're going to do the Doble test.
Right.
And at times, short times during those 4 days, you're going to have to shut the whole powerhouse down. We're going to have a uniform spill plan.
It's in the fifth passage plan
right now. We're going to do that.
Yep.
And that's only for like 6 hours at the most.
6 hours on the first day and two on the last day.
Okay. And the other time, you're going to have Unit 5 the priority and 6 the second priority if you have enough.
Right.
5 or 6. Now here's what I'd like in addition to those. That's going to create a back eddy going upstream on the south shore of the powerhouse. So it'll make it more difficult for adults to locate the South Shore powerhouse entrance. So what I'd like to see is at least a one-stop...
Roughkeeper.
...has joined the conference.
...to attract fish on that side of the river to give them a little more attraction to the spillway entrance on the North Shore. And it can be just as little as a one-stop open about what running out caves there.
So do we want to just look at the spill pattern right now? I know you've had some discussions on that, and that is, that's pretty minor, Bill. I don't think that's a big deal. On the other hand, if you feel it would make a difference, if it seems like something that could be written into the teletype. And our flows, uniform spill with no spillway weir. Our table looks like goes down to, doesn't go much below. Well, it goes down when the calculated river is only 11.3. I think we're still expecting the river to be somewhere between 18 and 24. Spill would be.
Might be 11.3 during that time.
Okay, so what he's asking, I believe, is if we, you know, we might only have, when we're spilling roughly 11, how much will we be spilling is the question. Okay.
But
then
actually,
we
6.5.
Why would you be spilling anything if you've got 5 and 6 available?
Well, you don't have 5 and 6 available. During the outage, they have to take the line out, so all units are out.
Okay, we talked about it. We're going to use the uniform pack.
Well, you'll have 5 units being available to every unit, 5. Mm-hmm. And then the other 5 or 7 or 10 of us evenly to whatever base you
sure.
build.
Okay.
And the spill pattern that's in here all the way down to 5.4 spill always has two stops in Bay 8 and just one stop at a variety of other places. So the pattern seems to have already built what you're requesting. I think maybe what you're requesting is there is one place where we're at 3.5K spill where we spread it out, one stop in Bay 2 and one stop in Bay 8, and you'd prefer that we put both those stops in Bay 8 and not have anything in Bay 2?
When you're operating units 5 and 6, that's the instead of pushing, however, a couple K through 5 and 6, that we would instead open one of the 7 spill bays at one stop to provide a retraction.
That's
point.
Right.
Just during those times that we're operating 5 and 6.
So that's kind of a long
or is it just during the day?
Just during the daytime. Say 5 in the morning
Thanks
until noon.
Five to one.
You
open Bay 8.
Five to
one. Open Bay 8, one stop.
Bay 8, one stop.
Because the rest of the room will be going through units
5
and 6.
Okay. So, I assume you're okay with that? Okay. So, we will move. It sounds like Lisa has interpreted you correctly.
Yeah,
sorry.
That's what I was talking about. I was fine with when.
Okay.
When there was.
When
the powerhouse was shut down.
Okay.
You just go to the uniform pattern that's in the fish pass.
Oh, we have enough to facilitate. Okay. So we can move on to the other topic.
Let's see if Tom's okay with this.
Tom, you good with that? Good. We're good with that.
Okay.
I'll take that as a yes today.
So we'll move
I'll
on
take
to
anything
with
that.
It was okay. What John did put out, it was like.
Okay. So what? I mean, you heard what Bill suggested. You can agree with that. Scott has agreed that Bonneville can provide that. So at times we're running
so I am I do have some qualms about it if it turns out that running everything in Bay 8 turns out to be a bad idea, we probably need some sort of alternative if it doesn't pan out very well in terms of passage.
A short time frame, John, you know, 6 hours one day and 2 hours the next, so by the time we would go through the effort to worry about it, it'll be over. So I think we're probably good on this topic. Marcus, because you're on the phone, I almost would like to have you initiate the next topic, which is related to operation of turbine unit one at Little Goose at low flows. And we seem to have a little bit of inconsistency in the guidance that we currently have in the fish passage plan, and you have been trying to implement from your perspective what's in the fish passage plan, and it has raised particularly some questions about what you've been being asked to do versus the fish passage plan in the last couple days. I think in my take home after reviewing emails and being on the sideline here just before I turn it over to you is that what we're trying to do with the course priority is to make sure that when we operate, we're operating within the 1% lower and 1% upper. But right now, we have some guidance in there that actually specifies a lower limit as a megawatts rather than a lower 1%. And that reduces some of the flexibility. And so we seem to be over-constrained. So maybe from your perspective, you could talk about your position.
Yes, no problem. And to give a little bit of history for those that aren't completely aware of the issue, in Section 4.1.2, the Fish Passage Plan, we're describing a back eddy that occurs with the TSW in operation. And when the TSW is in operation, it can create a back eddy behind the powerhouse. And so this whole thing is written so that we can have enough discharge out of Unit 1 to actually push that back eddy out of the way, so that we can continue to allow fish attraction for the adults coming upstream into the South Shore entrance. And what happens with the TSW in position and functioning, and if we drop below the 16K output, the back eddy overcomes the discharge of the unit, which then makes the back eddy spin and create confusion for the adults coming upstream, as well as possibly trapping the juveniles in that back eddy. So in looking at what's going on with the Fish Passage Plan and in the wording in LGS 21 under sections 4.1, where it's talking about running the unit at 16 KCFS to 17.5 KCFS, that was designed to be able to push that back eddy out. What's been happening is that it's been kind of misread in the sense from BPA, and they've actually requested the units to drop below the 16K unit one when there's more than one unit on. The way I look at this is that we need to stick with that 16K when the TSW is in operation. Otherwise, we do continue to have the back eddy.
So now that the TSW is removed, what is your perspective?
Yeah, so now that the TSW has been closed for the season, we do not have the causal effect of the TSW for the back eddy, and therefore we don't see that back eddy at lower discharge from Unit 1.
So I guess that's good, because as I read through the emails, one of the things that George brought to my attention was that he thought the reason that this had come up this year is that we were running the TSW later than we had in other years, just to do whatever. And so I think what we want to do then is just maybe have a Fish Passage Plan change that addresses this concern. And I guess we also want everybody to agree on what the path forward here is. So what I think Marcus tried to describe is that when we have the TSW in place and we go below 16K, we potentially put in place a back eddy that blocks adult passage. But if we don't have the TSW in place, there's no issues. And so from an RCC standpoint or Bonneville, what is our best way to modify the FPP to kind of satisfy now what we've heard from Marcus, as well as the flexibility that Bonneville has in here for below these 16K flows?
It'd just be a change form, and as soon as we run it through here, then it becomes, it's a living document, so as soon as we post it, it becomes an effective part of the operation.
So Scott, can you listen? Are you in agreement with Marcus at this point, or are you in disagreement?
Well, with the TSW in place, I understand what the concern is.
Okay.
When it's not in place, I don't know why we're operating the way we're doing it.
Okay.
Because you would have unit 1 at 16, then you would bring another unit on to the 11.5K. So it makes a big swing in the reservoir when you pick up the discharge that much.
So
what we had been doing was having two units come on at the low end and minimizing the delta. And so that's the operation we'd like to go with moving forward. We'd still use the same tables, the spill tables, and they have settings that show you where you get 30% of what you do.
So what I hear is that you would agree with a change form for the Fish Passage Plan, similar to what Marcus outlined, that would put another caveat in there that just basically says with the TSW in operation that you won't do what you can do when the TSW is not in place.
Sure, that's what you guys are proposing. It sounds good. I was curious though, Bill Hemlin, he's the one that did the modeling on this and what his insight is.
Sure, yeah, let's just turn it over to others. And can you hear other people okay on the phone there, Marcus?
So far, so good.
So, Bill, you have a...
Well, I don't have a problem operating one and two at lower, at the low end of the 1% range when you're down into these low flows.
Even with the TSW.
Well, I was thinking with the TSW off. Okay, that's the situation right now. Isn't that what we're facing right now?
Right, but if we continue to run the TSW longer like we did this year, then we have to decide, do we want to stick with the 16 and bring out a full another unit on, or do we do split it down and run for 38?
I guess, Bill, the way I would, and Marcus, this is Doug Ballas, Core RCC, and I just wanted to offer up, too, I do appreciate your perspective on ironing out tail race conditions to minimize impacts of eddies, but the thing that we struggle with in the division office as well is that, so as far as the FOP goes, we have an operation for Goose that we've implemented in years past where we go from the 30% operation down to a constant spill of 11, then down to 9. Then down to 7. With this new wording in there, we can only have so many hard constraints. We can't have a 4-bay constraint of 1-foot operating band. We can't have a unit hard constraint of 17 kcfs during low flow situations. And we can't have a hard constraint of the spill requirement. We can only have so many hard constraints. And adding this 17 k unit operation as a hard constraint creates a dead band. And so when you're switching from 1 to 2 units, something's got to give. You can't have a 1-foot operating range, fixed spill rate, and a hard constraint on units. And so I guess what I would advocate as far as this goes was, as you've indicated, Marcus, we hit that 17 kcfs on unit 1 when flows allow, and we can, as a soft constraint, not a hard constraint. Because I believe the way we're reading it, and I appreciate the fact that the project staff is honoring and recognizes the beneficial impacts of ironing out that tail race. But again, we have too many hard constraints in place. And I guess I would just advocate for, you know, I recognize the language in the fish passage plan is ambiguous. There's disconnects between the table, the narrative, the footnote. And I guess I would just advocate the intent and the spirit. And getting back to Bill, I think I'm in line with you. The intent and the spirit of this operation is to operate unit 1 within the 1% at the high range around 16.5 to 17. Wind flows allow to iron out the tail race. Are we on the same page? And then as
so far so good, yes.
And then as inflows decrease and we have this situation where we need to flip on between a 1 and a 2 unit operation, we've got to have 1% capability at unit 1 to toggle between the 1% range of 11 to 17-ish in order to have that flex. So I guess I think this we're all in the same intent with the spirit. We've just gotten lost. There's some inadvertent, there's some disconnect in the language in the FPP. So I guess I would just advocate through the FPP change form process, we work with the region to identify the disconnect between the table, the narrative, and the footnote.
So why don't, is that something that you're comfortable initiating out at your end, Marcus, maybe in conjunction with somebody in the district? Then we can get
I talked with my project biologist and we're more than willing to rewrite the section to clarify it. The only other thing that I kind of wanted to add to this, because I understand exactly the operational constraints, you know, I got my operators trying to maintain all of these too, and it's very difficult to manage, and so I completely understand that end of it. But the other caveat I want to throw at this is that if the TSW is in place and we decrease the discharge on unit 1 and bring the second unit up, whether it be unit 2 or unit 3, it's still not enough to push the back eddy out of there. What we saw during the last 30 days is that when we did do that, you can visually see in the tail race below the powerhouse that back eddy take control.
Right.
There is a level of flow in there that we kind of have to figure out where that's at and then make sure that we can manage that as well.
I think the lowest we looked at in the model, and we can go get the data, the modeling data from a couple of years ago, was 35. So this 25 was lower than what we looked at. And it seemed to me that at 35, that you could counteract the RSW by either having unit 1 at 17 or unit 1 and 2 at 11 each. So we may have to look at where.
Oh, this is John. I would have to say that when you get down to really low flows, it seems to me that a flat pattern is more effective, and instead of trying to continue to run the DFW at real low flows, and we already have that in the fish passage plan to accommodate the low flows in that sense.
Well, right now we don't have the flexibility to just flip the TSW on and off with the Tainer gate, and so you know, I think until we get that, what we need in as this FPP change form is put in is just wording that addresses what the project is seeing. We'll put that out for review. At that point, if you disagree or want to have some more discussion, we'll bring it back and have some more discussion. But we do need kind of an interim path forward because we are at low flows right now. And I guess I would like to hear if, just for the spirit of this conversation, we've taken out the TSW, so it doesn't really matter. So I think we're okay for this year. But we will go ahead and draft a coordination form that tries to address. The other thing we'll add to the table is we're hoping that the structural engineers do get out and make a decision this fall on whether or not the Tainer gate can be used to open and close the TSW, which will add some of this flexibility back in. If we're able to go there, great. We've made milestones. We've been trying to get there for years. If we don't get there, they come back and say no, then we'll still be constrained a little differently than we would have if they come back and say yes. So that said, I think right now you're okay to operate the rest of the season with no TSW, aren't you, Marcus? This is just an issue that, because, you know, kind of was ongoing until we got the TSW out on August 1st. Now that we have it out, you're not seeing any adverse impacts to running the two units?
You're absolutely correct.
Okay, so really appreciate your efforts in bringing this up. We really struggle when we go out for a period just in the fall and ask for changes to the fish passage plan for people to find things like this that are really critical obstacles, if you will, for you out at the project and operating, you know, and that an operator faces this and has to make a decision of, you know, which table in the FPP should he be following as he's getting direction from a schedule, and certainly understand the struggles that they've had, and will appreciate if you can help with development of that FPP change form, and then we'll get it out, get it reviewed, and have something written in the document that you're comfortable that your staff can easily follow?
Yeah, and that's exactly what we want to do on the rewrite. So George and I will start working on that wording, and then we'll make sure that we run it through our district folks as well to get it proposed to you guys.
Trying to get it finalized by November for the submittal to the new cycle for the next FPP.
Yeah, okay.
And there is a section in the TSW operating criteria section, I'm not sure if it's 2.3 point something, but essentially it's just when you get down to the criteria that defines when to close TSW, it's actually a paragraph that defines unit one at flows, total river flows less than 38 kcfs, that unit one can be operated below that upper 1% range. It doesn't say anything about an eddy, or it doesn't say anything about 16 kcfs discharge of the powerhouse, so it's much more broader flexibility, and that's just it's just a threshold based on total river flow. And so depending on where you look, we have flexibility to go to that lower 1%, but that table where it defines the 16 kcfs discharge, powerhouse discharge, that's where it becomes a little confusing and maybe problematic when we have a TSW in service at these lower flows.
So at a minimum, that wording will change, and there may be a caveat below that specific to the TSW.
Yes.
Here, LOV's 14, number 5.
I'm on page LVS 22.
Unit 14.
5 is the one he's referring to, where he gives specifics as what to do.
And I think that's where a lot of the confusion came from, in that when the EPA was looking for guidance in how to operate Unit 1, we cited that section, and it's in the teletype, to that it overflows us in 38 KCFS for the FPP. They can go down to these lower ranges.
The more confusing part, too, is there's a 38 to 31 range there.
Yeah,
and
then
the footnote over on
KCFS. There's a lot of different languages
talking about the same thing. We put so many different things in it that you could take what you want.
Pretty much.
So we had so much flexibility that we have different people interpreting it differently, though.
Yeah.
So what we want to do is have everybody on the same page so nobody's coming back feeling. So I think, Marcus, you're hearing this other spot, and I'm sure you were aware of it as you were interpreting, but it was on page LGS 14, and it was number 5. And it'll be important that we have that match up with the footnote, probably, for table LGS 5.
Right, the last line.
Absolutely. There was too many contradictory sections in here that just didn't interrelate. And so George and I's part in this will be to make sure that all of the Goose's wording in here line up correctly so there is no confusion.
And highlight as a justification the adult passage issue and the EDI, because right now that's not really discussed in here. We'll have it, we'll go out and coordinate on it, and then if and when people are at a model or have other data, then we can have further discussion.
Yeah, maybe we can go look at, run the model and look at the flows down to 25 and look at these different alternatives.
Well, one of the other little caveats I want to throw at this, because I spent some time this year bringing in some folks doing more bathymetric surveys in here, and with the undercutting below the spillway, it's naturally now making the flows move to the south, which is creating that back eddy. And so those are the things I think need to be considered into that model so that we can really see what's going on, and we've got the data.
Okay, and you know, if and when you're seeing these and you can capture either video or pictures, it may well be that if we need further discussion, we can have you guys come in with a little PowerPoint and further display some of what some of these folks haven't seen that you're seeing at the project and better understand it.
That's a good idea.
Pictures speak really loud. I mean, even though they're not perfect, what they may do is make them want to come out for a visit as well, but I think it would help people to... I mean, they don't show velocity and things like that, but they do, you know, you can see where there's white water and where there's movement differently at different operations in terms of eddy. Certainly those eddies at Granite and Goose, you know, there's usually debris in them, and the debris either lines up with the eddy or it's sitting out in the middle because the eddy's moving so fast, and so people can kind of look at a picture and discern a little better what's taking place.
Yeah, absolutely. If you look at the bathymetric stuff that we did, it's very clear when you can see the bottom of the tail race floor there, you can see why the water is being pushed in the direction that it is and why it's creating that back eddy. So pictures are worth 1,000 words, and we'll make sure we get that in line with the presentation.
Okay. Yeah, pictures are a video. Video's good, too.
All right.
Wait, thank you.
Wait.
And so, Marcus, this is Doug Baus, RCC. So as far as today's FPOM conversation went, recognizing the inconsistencies in the FPP, but highlighting, I believe it was page LGS 14, number 5, is it safe to say that Little Goose will feel comfortable moving ahead operating Unit 1 within the full 1% effective today, effective essentially now? Should they receive a request from Bonneville Power to operate Unit 1 within the full 1%? Is that...
Yeah, I think that will work appropriately now that the TSW is shut down. I think that would be fine.
Great. Thank you, Marcus.
Mm-hmm.
And if they need a teletype to clarify that... because it isn't inconsistent with that one particular table, I'd be glad to do that. Just let me know.
I would recommend that.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to make it clear. I think we'll have the RCC issue a teletype.
Thanks.
Please do.
Sure.
Boom, come on. I was trying to be loosey-goosey and just go with it.
No,
you're being all responsible.
No, it's good.
Loosey-goosey wasn't working, so
thank
now
you,
we're
Marcus,
having to tell us
it. Calling in. Really yeah. appreciate your input and your efforts yeah. to
right.
together this form.
Let's move on. Slam that gavel.
Do you want
that gavel? So hey, Byrne, this is Ed Meyer. I need to step away from the phone for a little bit.
All right.
Thanks.
Let's move on to Portland's updates. And we will zip right through these, as we always do. Mr. Houseman.
A participant has left the conference.
Bonneville ROV inspections. Tell us about them.
Well, pretty good in general. Andy probably feel a little more since he was actually doing them, but I believe the only issue we saw was a single blown-off grating. Kind of going back towards the elevators down at Cassidy Valley. So I'm not sure why. I haven't seen it yet. It should be videoed, hopefully. That's probably not a huge risk based on location, but
is it completely off?
Yeah.
I don't know. I was just told it was blown up, but I haven't seen it.
If it's mostly off, partially still covered. So, like,
is on Cascade Island. So, which diffuser is off?
This is like 18, I believe, is what they said. So it's, you know, yeah, so it's going back. So fish that are not meandering back towards the elevators, you're not going to encounter. Yeah, they're still close. It could be adjusted, obviously.
But that letter is not scheduled to be dewatered this winter, right? It will. Do you want to put it on without dewatering it and making sure there's no fish underneath it? Because you won't get divers to go inside. I mean, my diver.
ROV? Can you ROV it? The small one?
Can they just look in there? If you have a diver, can they see
Is it in the middle or on the sides?
The grid itself on the north side. They could look down there. It's still there.
If there's lamprey down there, they probably won't see it.
Get back up.
Well, lamprey would be in there anyway if they want to be in there.
Yeah,
it's all stuff.
Yeah, look on that. It's just if they can see salmon. I mean, I'd rather not have more get in.
Sure.
If you don't see much in there, I'd say that's fine. Let's put it over whoever's in there is trapped.
So we should probably try and get divers sooner.
Yeah,
rather
September.
Than later.
Can we schedule that right after spill?
Get divers in there
as soon as possible. Diver.
Yeah, but, well, no, I can run it that way.
A participant has left the conference.
So we'll just not run that, and then as soon as we get diver in there, we'll.
I think we're still still cogitate.
Are you guys talking down there? I can't hear a damn thing you're saying.
If it can wait,
I just
wait,
see a bunch of gums flapping.
We
down
could
there.
Potentially tie it in to the same time period when we'll have Washington Shore.
Right.
No, we can't do that.
Yeah.
Never mind.
No, that's not a good time. Yeah, I think probably should. Can you even fix it now? I mean, that's the idea of doing the roads now, is to see if there is a problem or not, and then take care of them before the big run hits.
One thing I don't know is what they're going to be comfortable with diet flow wise.
Well, they should be able, so when they do the fishway inspection, you used to be able just to shut off the attraction flow and they could get in there and do the entrance. There should be no problem with that.
I would agree.
Do you know how we can do it?
The dive safety office that likes to have everything dry. Should be no problem to get a diver in there, push it back into place, bolt it down with no attraction flow, and then you still keep the upper section.
I'm going to go to the easel. I think you can actually let it roll for him. Is it possible just to let another greeting go I'm thinking of another piece of grading, heavy grading.
Didn't we try that in Washington Shore when all of them blew off? Lay one down.
I think we should just get a diaper in there.
Yeah.
An emergency.
Yeah.
That's what I think is what you do.
How fast will it buzz to a dive, though?
Well, since it's an emergency, we should be able to do it in 30 days.
Will we be able to qualify this as an emergency?
Unless you'd like a bunch of dead fish on the colonel's head, I'm pretty sure we can say this is an emergency.
It's a strange catch, but
you've
got plenty of pictures to Photoshop.
So how about this? Turn off flow until you get a dive in. If you get a dive in, fix it, and go back to the normal operations.
Yeah.
That work?
Yeah, we're wondering, and this is, I have no idea when it occurred, obviously, but
yeah.
We did see probably 2 weeks ago, one of our electricians was reprogramming valves over there, and I haven't run into him. I was doing an inspection that day. It was just rare in and of itself, but he said, you know, I just did these things, have a look, get feedback to me. All the fuses that should have been open were open, but the water that was coming through right there was ridiculously strong. So I said, the valve positions are wrong, the fuses are right. He went back and adjusted things, but I'm wondering if that one event actually flew that great.
How long ago was that?
That was, when was it? 2 weeks. So that was then.
Well, that's what I'm concerned about. I could run a steelhead with a lot of steelhead vessels.
We all
slam a lid on a bunch of fish that might actually. We're just not going to know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Turn the water off right now, and then we can dive in there. If the diver can flash the light around,
if he sees a lot of fish in there, let's hit the brakes and think about it a little bit. And maybe the diver's still let him leave.
And you can't put the small ROV you can put down in there?
I don't know. You guys put the small ROV in there? You could? So we could just get a good look there. And wouldn't that be nice? Underwater.
It's supposed to have a hook so you could do that.
It's got a hook, but I mean, what are you going to do? Just pull it? Still got to bolt it down. So we'll get a dive, we'll shut it down, get a diver, get it fixed, and move on. Got it?
Yeah. As far as the fishing or RV goes, they didn't see anything unusual. I mean, debris-wise, we just dredged there, so that was good. I don't know what the feedback was as far as how the rake itself engaged. I wasn't out there with the trash rack. That was done by Dive Safety, so I'm assuming we'll get a video so we can review what the engineers will review to
us know if they think it needs to have the head of the rig adjusted or whatnot, because you know, they're just pushing.
You guys get the bridge down. Do you guys have any after hydroacoustic of what it looks like now? I saw a picture of before dredge, and that was impressive. I was wondering if we had any acoustic work done after the dredge.
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I don't think they've done it. Sorry, they haven't post dredge.
No, I thought John sent something.
He didn't get it, that's great. He sent that. He sent the before and then after.
We have anecdotally noticed in the control room pretty significant difference in our need to foot trash. So they're pleased from that, and that's just different foot trash that they hear about from us. So it says
Did you bring the yards of material?
6,000. Fair amount.
How much did Tammy get? She needs some for her guards, I mean. So, and that gets back to the next verse of questions. So, we're going to conform on meeting some time about the trash rack. What our platform is for bottle trash rack.
Yeah, he is. At the September Fitterwig meeting.
Yeah, okay. If that's the plan, we'll do.
I can't share that with you right now.
An update from Mike's that Delta SCT with, I think, surprising shocking to us.
Really?
Well, in fact, we didn't need to do anything. So,
yep.
It's like, oh, okay.
That's what you're going to hear from Rusich. Because, well, I won't go into it. He'll explain it all at the September 5th Fitterwig. I recommend you attend.
That's from Rusich. That's all right.
All right. Let's just keep on moving here.
Okay.
Temperatures?
Temps.
323.
Right now, SMF is every other day. And Prefix the only group in the AFF. However, I did see Buck from that group out here a few minutes ago, so I'm assuming they might not be in there either. Technically, it didn't hit 72. It hit 71.9 yesterday, so they might be being cautious. They have been this year, as well as actually everyone in there's been very kind of proactive with regards to temperature. So it was 71.9 was the average yesterday, so they were all night. Dewatering plans and the work numbers actually for us, we had, like I said, we had them more or less in note form. We're trying to put in the more formal protocol to be available for dewatering to review and for us to have on hand for the weird ones, more or less. When we just send the branches for out for the next thing, so we can discuss with them. So it's a work in progress.
Okay, let's go to 325, the Dells, your ROV inspections.
Finished our ROV inspection grading Tuesday. Everything looks good on it. Of course, we're not able to be at the ball grading, as you go up the ladder, we can go up everything downstream from the last years. We tried to go in one of the upstream years and stuff like this, and we got but everything looked good. All the attachments looked good. And then while we had the machines out of service, we took that opportunity to scan the trash racks better to determine intakes. And because in the past when we run the ROV down on the turbine intakes, there's been a few units where we get about 3/4 of the way down. We started seeing some in small amounts, and so we just turned around and back out. So we wanted to know what's on the bottom, very bottom of the trash rack. So we had them come out and they just stopped. Or once it's a result of is during construction, they excavated those intakes, and F1 for this downstream slot is the end of what they had to excavate, and then you have a rock, you know, your natural rock topography going up from there, and so it looks like it's just sloughing off from that. I don't think it's a problem when you're talking top to the bottom and just on the one slot, the other side is less.
This is a unit one.
F1.
All right, F1.
Yeah.
F1. All the way down that.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it may have been like that for.
If you share film, will it eventually create a nice bubble?
Possibly. That'll be our backup system.
Option C.
Yeah.
It won't be that good of a 10-foot hole.
Yeah. But it was, you know, really interesting seeing this sonar, because you can see the entire topography the whole way across. You can see the sill of the track and the rope clear. So, I'd recommend if there's any questions on any of the projects. I'm curious.
How expensive is it to use?
Achieve its well, it's out of district. It's the district ROB, And they're relatively cheap. Washington is a contractor. So, as far as that rock piling, it's not an issue with getting plenty of water out of the pitch units. It's just good to know it's there.
We use monitor as long as it's not growing.
Yeah.
Hit. Okay. 326 is John Day's mid-season fishway inspection.
Okay, it was pretty simple. It was completed on August 1st, last week. All the grading panels were found in place, properly attached, no bolts missing on both fishways, by the way. We were using that district commercial ROV, which is now Diving Safety Office acquired. They provide excellent service. It's a commercial type of equipment. Then next one is John Day Fish Pump 2, returned to regular service again on August 1st. It was out for a period of July 10th to July day before August 1st, and the mitigating factor took a little bit longer to repair due to 2 weeks long line 3 outage, which our electricians were busy with. And anyway, we have been running John Day South with three turbines since then, and it's working fine. And then the next one is John Day temperatures. We went into SMS bypass on July 25th, and it's been staying that way. The temperature have been increasing since then. On the 25th was the first time we have 70 degrees. And condition sampling, only 100 fish, which is limited sampling, twice a week. And of course, wanted to mention that full flow pit tug detection is unchanged.
Okay. Thanks. So let's get into research updates. John's not here. I don't know if there's any other updates from you, Sean.
No.
Okay. AFF Marts, we kind of talked about. We're setting up a meeting on the 20th, so John will send out an Outlook invite for that. RCC update.
Starting up at Lower Granite, yesterday's 24-hour average, 24 KCFS. 5-day forecast, 26, and 10 days, 25. McNary, yesterday's average, 166, forecasted in 5 days to be down at 145, 10 days, 154. Bonneville's yesterday average, 172, forecasted 5 days out, 144, and 10 days, 158.
With
that little bump
it's
about.
Lisa?
Could you please repeat the granite numbers? I didn't have my pen in hand.
Okay, just for you. Yesterday's average at Lower Granite, 24. 5-day forecast, 26. And 10-day forecast, 25.
Thank you very much.
All right. Moves us to lamprey updates. Washington Shore lamprey structure.
So since Brent's here, do we want to cover the coordination form or now? Or
sure.
So I think mostly you're aware that during construction, at the tail end of construction for the new lamprey plume at Washington Shore at Bonneville, there was a failure of one of the support rods that the plume itself is hanging from. And so Brent Welton, who's a mechanical engineer with the Portland District and is the TL on that project, has been working with the PDT and then folks from INCA, who is the contractor who did most of the design work on the plume, to come up with a fix. There's a temporary kind of bracing that's in place right now. I don't know how many of you, did everyone get a chance to look at the coordination form at all? Okay. Tom?
Sorry, I read it last night.
Great. So the idea here is we're very concerned about further failures of these rods, and again, Brent's here to kind of go over kind of the scope of the repairs and other tasks that we're looking at having the contractor address. The idea of getting in this fall prior to dewatering the Bradford Island ladder, which is December 1st. So, Brent, do you want to kind of?
Sure. Do you want me to start by covering the history of it, or just some of the work that we're intending?
We've lived it.
Great. So let's cover the primary work is the installation of the new support hangers, and obviously bulk of that work is done by divers. To give you an idea, there are six of the support rods or supports that will need to be installed underwater by the divers. The current plans have got 8 anchors on each of those to be drilled. Total of 48. You start doing some simple math at 2 hours a piece. Simplify things. Yeah, you're looking at 100 hours. You're looking at 12 dive command days, if you will. Other items for work for the divers to be doing is to install a couple of I-beams for the pump trolleys to go on to feed the LPS, so to provide water into the top of the system for the for University of Idaho's work. We also have a vibration issue with the lower entrance picket lead stems. The stem is held in its stem guides, but they need to be adjusted to reduce the amount of rattling, noise, and vibration that's being caused or transmitted there at the entrance to the ladder. So we'd like the divers to tighten that up. Also, as a matter of adjusting or fine-tuning, I guess, some of the access panels on the tops of the flume, because right now at higher flows we have a lot of entrained air, and that's being swept along with it, and right now all of that is boiling out. Well, if we operated at higher flows, 62 CFS or so, that causes a plume of bubbles at approximately the flow splitter or the downstream end of the lower flume. So we would like the divers to go in and open up small pieces of the seals around the hatches to help reduce, I guess, the amount, or mitigate the amount of bubbles that is coming out of the bottom end of the lower flume. As far as designing or fixing that problem. If we have time for the divers, we'd like to prep. We're looking at installing a diaphragm in the upper flume water supply pipe, which would serve to reduce the amount of entrained air that is carried down to the lower flume. Just eliminate that problem. All this other ancillary work for the divers is fill-in time, if you will. Since each of the anchors that need to be drilled for the new supports takes a couple hours each, we get to the end of the day and we've got an extra hour. What are we going to do with our divers to maximize our time? We'll go over and make a couple modifications to the access panels. Or the access hatches, sorry, on the tops of the flumes. So there's quite a bit of dive work to be done there, and I think the forum is asking for dive work to basically begin, or the operations to begin on October 15th, so running all the way through November 12th. And there's other ancillary work that will be done up top, too. But that's, I guess, the bulk of the dive work. Is there anything else you...
And just an overview of the operations. It would look a lot like what's in here. It looks a lot like what we were doing in March or April, with partial operation of the ladder, with NUVND closed. No flow scenario at Powerhouse 2 during dive work. The DSM would have to be out of service during this.
Why is that?
What was that?
Why take the DSM out?
The DSM dumps into the ERC, and the ERC exits right there at the entrance to the fish ladder, so it would be a problem for the divers.
It's great to oil it out, but it's still in the way as it is out.
Did you guys try diving? I can't remember with that thing out there.
No, the DSM was.
It was always out, or we delayed bringing it back.
Yeah, but it was out because you guys were putting in that huge piece, and
right.
You couldn't have any flow at all. So that might be something to look into here.
The valve's in there now, so you can disconnect that.
They were, the dive safety on the last go around, they were, anyway. I mean, I think we wiggled and we tried to get anything at Powerhouse 2. And from a dive safety standpoint, I felt like with the last installation, they were pretty averse to any flow.
The day we brought the DSM back, it's the day that valve.
So the other things to consider to maximize the amount of dive days is to, we're putting bulkheads in to close up, or we're asking to close off NUE and NDE. Those do have the adjustable gears there, which have seals on them. So need further input from the project to know if. We can just raise those up and close the flow out from those entrances, or we need to drop the bulkheads in. Putting bulkheads in, they only seal from the outside in, right? So if we are still continuing to run the south entrances, that means our junction pool will probably have at least a foot of head higher than the tail race. So all of the bulkheads will be pushed off your seals. Well, they will be blocking the majority of the flow. They won't be sealed. So, if the adjustable weirs, which have seals on them, are usable and can be raised above the tail race levels, that would probably gain us an extra half a day on either end of the operations, an extra full 5 days.
Yeah,
Didn't we do that at the end of the last one when they were having to dive right near the slot?
It was suggested, but in the end, I think just for comfortability. I'm not sure if the idea had been passed around enough to get a consensus. But it results in a full dive day when things are done. It could be worth looking at, especially since we're concerned.
Was that comfortability on the part of the project or on the part of dive safety or the contractor?
I think it was the project.
I'm pretty sure because we looked into it, I wasn't sure if we could do that either because we're not only functioning that way as a bulkhead, but I'm almost positive we signed off on being able to do that before. But I can double check.
Okay. Because they're basically roller blades.
Yeah.
So, and then we have a discussion yesterday about trying to control the level of the trailers.
I want you to figure it out. So as far as the kind of why we're here today too in this forum, in another forum that some of these folks attend and others don't is TMT. So fast forward to about middle of October, the typical TMT conversation goes something like this. Per the BIOP, the Chum tailwater elevation of 11.5 approximately starts, I think the RPA says, the first week of November or when Chum arrived. So all of a sudden, now we're going to have this concurrent operation that's happening just prior to. As far as tailwater requirements go, in order to achieve an 11.5 tailwater, you have to push anywhere from 110 to 130 kcfs. And so with this operation, for example, if we find ourselves in a situation where regional salmon managers, it's usually Washington, comes and says Chum have been in Grays River, we start talking about that 11.5 tailwater for Chum. If we find ourselves in a situation where we have Powerhouse 2 out of service, we have Powerhouse 1 in service, Powerhouse 1 capacity, and just a little nuance here, are we coordinating the BOP operation for Powerhouse 1? My understanding is we are. Is that a fair assumption?
I think that's a fair assumption.
Okay. And that, we probably should talk about that too. I mean, as far as regional coordination goes, we should talk about if we're assuming that's in the coordination or not. If it's not in here,
first time I've heard that.
If it's not in here, then it's reasonable to assume Powerhouse 1 capacity at 1% would be reduced in the neighborhood of 15K, 13K. So you have to shave off Powerhouse capacity. So let's just say for the spirit of conversation, what would Powerhouse 1 capacity be in? So if we had 90, Powerhouse 1, we had to shave off 15.
Assuming there's one you've got. But 90 is what should be able to pass with 1 at 10K per unit.
So 90 at 10K per unit.
And you have 5 incremental. So 95 is about what the project can pass without additional.
Okay, so under that assumption, can we just do easy math and say hydraulic capacity of 100 just to make math easy? And we had to pass 120 to 130. To maintain an 11.5 tailwater for Chum, you can see the conflict. And so in order to get there, we would have to spill the difference. Spill, as we're aware, would result in total dissolved gas. Total dissolved gas, we're outside of our waiver period. We have to maintain TDG below 110. Upon further conversations with our water quality staff, they're under the understanding for this, since it's outside the waiver period, since there's fish involved, the requirement would actually be 105, and I did want to corroborate that with NOAA Fisheries. Generally, the 105 is for the spring, for fish bearing for spring, and we do that for the B2 corner collector operation, but would like your feedback on, is it 105, is it 110? This would be for adults.
It's a shallow water habitat.
So it would be 105.
That's what it is for the state of Oregon.
So it would be 105. And so ballpark numbers on what do we have to do to get to 105. I think numbers I heard recently, they get to 105, 30 to 40 kcfs, I think. So the idea is here we'd be cutting it close on a lot of fronts. We're likely going to cut it close on having, if we find ourselves in a situation the first week of November where we have, we need to manage to 11.5, we may have to spill to get there. We may not. If we continue to have conditions like we have now, low water, the CHUM operation may not start till later, but we need to start having the conversations now. The last thing we want to do is find ourselves at the end of October saying, oh my gosh, look at all the water coming at us. And we have nowhere to put it. And we're going to need to spill to do an 11.5 CHUM or not. Maybe we delay. You know, folks, salmon managers need to be mindful of the consideration this has on the CHUM operation. And if we have any impacts, we need to start talking about those now. And so I guess, Sean, some of the salient comments I would like to leave on this end is we probably need to have, make sure we recognize how this may or may not impact CHUM operation, how this operation may or may not require spill. And then lastly, the BOP issue, we should talk more about that. I got them down here.
Bob, the date is
the date?
The 12th. The 9th is what I heard kicked around. The 12th is in your document. And so it's, we have sort of wide coverage. The 1st through the 10th is when the CHUM operation will release it again. So you guys are asking for a comment.
And that, excuse me. And I'd also throw on there, too, even Operation of the Corner Collector. That is a known gasser. So if we flip it on and gas is already a concern and we have the opportunity to pass flow, we would have a preference to pass it by the corner collector or the spillway. And I think even another issue may be what pattern, what special pattern modification, if any, might salmon managers prefer to see should we need to spill.
The date from the 12th, I think, came from looking at the calendar and the date that was given to me, and that this is much, how much time we need.
We got to do the work. That part.
But we worked, exactly. Yeah. And then I worked back from that and figured out how much time it takes to bring things back into service. So.
Well, first thing I can say is that I can't agree with not likely to have adverse effects. There will be an effect on this. First effect is going to be the fallback. If that's the effect of changing priority from second powerhouse to first powerhouse, moving away from the screen bypass system to the nut screen to powerhouse, and recognize that there's ITS in that solution, but still will increase fallback through nut screen units. And so that's an issue for us. The other part of it is fish passage efficiency for juveniles. Pulling those screens out, we still have juvenile passage out there. We don't have screen bypass system again at the first powerhouse, and so second powerhouse is a priority because of that. And now we're shifting that away. Current collector is off, so there's no guidance efficiency whatsoever at the second powerhouse. And I hear some talk in here about rain at night, which is the primary time for juvenile passage. So that's an obvious effect. We just do still have fish moving in October, especially once the temperatures cool down and we always see something maybe by then migrating. So, and then there's the chum flows that you guys are talking about and focused on, but I want to put that focus back on the other two issues, because the chum issue, I think, is the least of my concerns. I'm not too worried about that time of the year. The 105, now that you brought, you talked about from our perspective, I'm not worried about the 105. That's a Stanley-Oregon standard. We're concerned about, about sack fry for the most part. So it's just a gleam in their eyes because from that issue. So I'm not worried about that, but that's going to be between you guys and Oregon. But what I am worried about is they'll fall back. We do have that issue that has to be addressed, and the juvenile, some effect on juvenile survival. So that has to be addressed as well in terms of analytically or at least acknowledged, and that wasn't acknowledged in the coordination. So like I said, I just cannot, agree with the not likely effect at all on this one. So I mean, take that as, I see the reason to get the work done, I agree with that, I know you have to get it done, but I can't just say, yeah, no problem, I can't do that. So, you know, I'm just going to get everything out of this to get this done. There are some mitigative factors. I mean, the corner collector, is that a problem running that? I mean, way downstream, so I wouldn't expect it to be an issue for anybody working out there.
It was okay last time.
So running that could mitigate. I mean, I'd like to look at what the difference is between that and you know, guidance efficiency. The corner collector, for some of your links, is not so good, but neither is the efficiency of the screens, and so it may just cancel out completely. So that's one side of it. From the other side, though, is the adult passage issue. And I dug into the research this morning a little bit since I had many hours to look at this morning. It's kind of hard to tell because there's not a lot of passage, a lot of fallback through the first powerhouse, but that's all from research that was done under very, very different conditions. Springtime operations, lots of spill, and looking at fish that fell back involuntarily. So you get into that time, later time of the year, when you have fish that are starting to, especially with steelheads, not migration, move around a bit. And they have some overshoots, which we didn't consider in those fallback studies. You're looking at a different group of fish that weren't really covered by the bogs and the kefir and studies. And so, you know, we have had those discussions in this group about when we pulled the screens at Bonneville about making sure that we had some screens in place to operate and operate the units. Until we got the sluice bay, which took away that.
Has left the conference.
The sluice way itself does pass a good number of adults, I think, so that's the good side of it, but I still think there's going to be some effect there. The sluice way back in the spring, back in the early 2000s in the spring, was the sluice way passed maybe 15% of the fallbacks, where the turbines were like 6 to 10, somewhere in that range. So efficiency, the guide's efficiency is maybe 3/4 of what goes through the turbine data. That's a good thing, but there's still the other, you know, maybe 2/3. There's still a third that goes through the turbine data, and so that would expect a mortality rate based on those of a certain amount. So normally we wouldn't run the power, that powerhouse this time of year, so that's a bad, that's an issue. So that has to be considered somehow, at least recognized. And I did look at passage pretty carefully, too, a 10-year record of passage. And I went back a bit further than you did, Sean. I went back to 2003 to 2012. I always, you know, working with a rolling average for my 10-year. And we do have quite a few fish passing, at least during those first 2 weeks, the 15th through the 31st. Actually, even up to about the 6th of November. For some reason, passage magically drops in half at that point. For Chinook and for steelhead, the exact same day.
Chumstrokes.
What's that?
We pick up flow there usually in chumstrokes, so I don't know why.
Maybe it is. Yeah.
It's almost exact. That's the date.
Chumstrokes. Something changes there right at that point. But that's been going on for a very long time, too.
2000.
Mm-hmm.
We started that in 2000.
Well, it's about to just close to 2001, so maybe that's it. But those first 2 weeks within that passage, there still are. There's a lot of Chinook and quite a few steelheads. The average I got was about 390 Chinook per day and 208 steelhead per day for that 10-year average.
What time of day they enter the water?
Do I know what time they end the ladder?
What time do we plan on starting the work every day?
Well, this is a fallback issue I'm concerned about, though. Not so much. I'm not worried about delay as much going upstream, I think. Mitigating Bradford for Washington, or using Bradford in place of Washington is Cascade Island. I think they're okay from the lake standpoint. What I'm a little worried about too is running that powerhouse at night and pulling fish into the tail race and then basically kind of shutting things off. I realize south side is still open, but you kind of could be stranding fish in there too. So that's that could be a delay factor. Probably not something that we need to worry too much about. But you're running it at night. Fish, we know if adults move at night, they don't enter. Past the ladders at night, but for the most part, but they do move in the river, so you could push up in there kind of stand. So I mean, there's it's not a freebie.
So you need an updated form with all of the analysis in it, and then
I think
a
we need to recognize it. I don't think
right.
We can say not likely. I don't know what that means to you guys. I mean, I know what it means to us. It means you're kind of hanging. I just don't see that no fisheries can say no effect. I can't do that. There's too many potential effects to say that. So,
as far as operations go, though, if you're saying it's not likely, it can't be an unlikely adverse effect, can't be no effect that instantly, the only other option in the suite of consultation is biological opinion. Biological opinions take anywhere from 0 to 135 days to August. It's by the time 135 days, we got August,
but
September.
I'm not going to say I'm okay. So
I understand that.
I run through the scenario, but the other option is just to do it.
Well, you write it in your coordination form that you believe whatever you can middle ground with what he's saying, and then it's written down that you agree there's going to be some, but in a timely manner in order to accomplish it.
Right.
You got to get it done.
These are the plan to mitigate, minimize those impacts.
Right.
This is what we have in place, and keep your fingers crossed.
That you don't have anything like that.
Yeah. I think the reason why we're talking about doing this fall is there's a significant risk of this thing falling into the water in the next year.
So what Sean's talking about there is the hang around, I guess, or failure analysis of the old supports. And I guess the designer's original thought was that the shelter over there and their CFD models are showing very little velocities or low velocities there. So when Hangar Rod 5 breaks, we asked them to go back and intentionally look at the flow-induced vibrations that they had not covered the first time. And lo and behold, the 1 foot per second or low velocities is causing is right in the area where the vortex shedding on the backside of the hangar rods causes a walk-in, which just really was driving the vibrations. And so as the short-term fix, we put in those additional U-braces out of there, which are meant to change the frequency or the natural frequency at which those rods will vibrate, which means we now have to have higher flows or higher velocity flows pushing past them. So we have a short-term fix. And by short-term, the analysis was indicating the lifespan is kind of like this giant check mark. It's very high for no flow. And takes a sudden drive or a drop all the way down to less than just a couple of years, and then it starts going back up again as flows increase until you get to about 6 feet per second, and then they go down again. So the idea, in looking at that, it really stresses that we have a support system that needs to be changed, and sooner rather than later, and we can see that. I have been investigating it, that it is susceptible to eccentric loading. So there's misalignments in it that causes additional stresses in the hangar rods at the top. So we've done some temporary measures to help reduce that and fix the issue. It needs there is concern, and that's why what is driving the schedule for this. We look at installing this in October 15th through November 9th, 12th. That's a it's going to be a rapid
like an accelerated schedule.
It's an accelerated schedule, thank you. And then we have middle of September to the middle of October for fabrication process. We've got middle of August to the middle of September for material acquisition and submittals. And this is the first week of August. So this is the, there's been a little bit of a, kind of a, an iteration, if you will, of looking to what can we, what sort of outage might we be able to provide? Bringing that back through to the contractor and to the designers and saying, can we get a design that we can do in this time period? Now they've put forth a design and we're coming back and trying to confirm that we can, that we have enough time in the schedule, in the requested outage to make that happen.
Structure fails, how would it fail? The engineer would be vibrating with things. What are we, other than it doesn't work, what are we?
Worst case scenario. So if a hanger rod, another one, fails, they take the, well, depending on which one, but if we pick on one of the lower flume pieces, since it is the heaviest component, when hanger rod 5 failed, it that end of it drops down onto its lateral anchors, which are only meant to constrain it from horizontal motion. And it also transferred some of its weight to hanger rod 6, which is for the upper flume. Which increases the stress and the loading on the anchors next to it. We were fortunate that we had some pit tag antenna braces, one installed across that pit tag antenna, so we were able to carry some load across that pit tag antenna, which we normally wouldn't be able to do.
The other option is don't fix it this year and get it next year and have potential to just have a failure.
Yeah. Artificial reef.
Yeah. We only have a window of what we have right now. We can't get it in then. You gotta go, no. And then that's what your risks are. Pick it up and leave.
Well, why is there anything you can't go 2 weeks later?
You've got the lithium water this year that we.
Bradford Island. We cannot go into December because of the need to get Bradford Island dewatered and repaired.
Yeah, but 2 weeks on 2 weeks would be December.
It depends on what flow you have as far as we have to do for Chum. So we're impacting Chum as it is.
Exactly. We tried to shift it back a little bit.
That's tough in the line. That's fine.
Yes.
It's worse than that, actually. I think every direction you go to look for flexibility, there's an alternative constraint.
That's right. Well, we don't want to, do we want to start and get halfway through and go, oops,
I think we have a priority for some of the anchors. The worst that are affected by the vortex shedding are those that are near the west end of the ladder. And so we have a priority for hanger rods. 1, 3, and 5, I think, are our top.
So if we get those done, we have to abandon. The other question is, how long is this experiment run? This balloon is an experimental sort of test passage. It's expected life expectancy as well.
We had to by necessity because of its location.
Yeah,
build it essentially for a right.
Yeah. But if it turns out it only passes 28 fish this year, and next year it passes 29, I mean, when do we say, wow, this isn't exactly working? And then we have to schedule a window to take it back out.
Yeah.
going to be at least 3 years before we have an answer to that, because this year has been a bust for a variety of reasons, including that boil issue, or primarily that boil issue.
I worry about that too. Are you going to take care of that with this in water?
The idea there, worked with a hydraulics guy to, rather than having one location that is doing all of the venting of the entrained air, to allow that entrained air to come out on the water box side of it, not on the lamprey, the passage side.
Yeah.
And okay. So there'd be a stream of bubbles there. And then the so it's more of a mitigation side or a reduction, right, than it is a solution to it.
Right.
And then the solution, however, is more in, has more work involved.
Yeah, that's how it's another
running
water work coming up
yeah.
next year.
Right.
That gets into when do you sort of want to kind of, if you were to take it out. Next year looks like the window you could have worked, you can work on it.
Yeah.
It seems like every other year is when you can get in that area.
Mm-hmm.
So you sort of have to plan for every 2 years is when you're, if you have a bigger window than 3 feet.
Okay.
I would say, yeah, it'd be no sooner than the 2016-17. I would say it's probably not likely.
And then what about the O&M component of that one? Who funds the maintenance of that thing is what I'm really concerned about when I get this kind of call saying, oh, it's just... I know. Just like...
But in a way, we have to look at the 14 to 16 to 18. I mean, these are all the windows that we have to work on this. So they have to make it to the next window.
Right.
Yeah, I mean... This is particularly sensitive just because Bradford hasn't been worked on for so long. It has to be
finished.
So, like, sounds like the path forward is to get this thing updated, have your list of priority in there as far as your hangers, what you're going to do in that time, and then say what the impacts are and what...
What, I think we still need to talk through the mitigation for impacts. That's something that there's corner collector operation, which is there's one side of that, that may be all we have. We can't.
Well, I guess then
we're
then
at the capacity that we have now is the capacity, yeah, so I'll just describe it from that. But I think that there's that plus the issue of running, you know, if we don't run car house 2 at night, that gets away from some of the issues of juveniles because we're running, like the spill issue.
Is operation of DSM-2 off? Is there any negotiation on that, the role that DSM-2 may play? I can't remember. I did hear there's the hydraulic effect, the powerhouse 2 and the tail race, they can't. But is that how strong of a no is that? Is that some, I guess, because to me, if we could still have screened units of powerhouse 2, as far as what I'm hearing from the juvenile concern and the adult concerning, having screened units of powerhouse 2 would take away that. And so I guess, is that completely off the table, or is there any nugget in there?
We'd have to talk with the dive office, I guess, about their experience. I know when we were just out there for the ROV inspection there, I remember having a brief conversation with Todd Manning about DSM.
And it was no.
No, we didn't talk about it in the context of this, but in the work he's done in that area, he was familiar with the boil that came up from that, and I think it was them that had suggested having the DSM out for the initial work last winter, or in the spring, keeping it out of service.
What does it take to turn it on and off, DSM?
Probably used 4 days to put the screens in and out.
Yeah,
you're talking just to shut the water off?
Just shut the water off. If you leave your screens in, you're not running the units, then you turn it back on with screens and units. Is that something that you could do?
Yeah.
Not daily. I mean,
it's
closing orifices and closing the add-in water, which is not a difficult thing, but you know, it's usually you check out that channel and make sure we're not stranding fish. You don't like to
use transects.
Not normally, no.
Because I mean, I don't know. I know you. I've never done it this way, but you could conceivably turn it on and off. You're going to vacate the barge. Everything gets out of the way.
What if you left the add-in water on? It's not very much. It's 60 CFS. And if that's too much, then the lab has to come down because valve 1 will discharge right there, too. And that's a lot of water.
So you guys can look more into whether or not that's a the add-on option. And then, Gary, the other thing I want to do, we do have to take the DSM out and start taking the speeds out before the 15. It takes you a couple of days. So that'll do. Otherwise, it's going to cut into your work time.
Right. I think we put in for taking screens down starting on October 9th.
Okay. Yeah, and the other thing, we could also maybe not take them all out. So yeah, put back in.
Yeah, the thing is, just get your computer all going to run one of your units or something like that.
Right.
So okay. That's what I was going to ask about people wanting to sleep.
That's what we did last time.
Yeah.
Same
yeah.
thing.
So first choice will be able to turn on and off daily. The second one will be to take out partial screens and get back in when we're done.
And then what you can do is just take the screens to pull out. If you can't run off and on, then you're probably going to have to move. So that's my point. It's not on the screen. But if you're not able to run the DSM, you can probably get the screens in. Or be for it. Because you wouldn't want to run the screen, you can't run the unit on the screen now. So, depending what kind of flexibility you have, you can run the DSM to take the screen to report. So, we're here to make the meeting for you. Yeah. Last time you could be meeting.
So, what's the drop dead date on decision making here? I mean, it sounds like you guys are on a tight timeline to get the contractor to fabricate and get, I mean, this is going to happen regardless, or when's a go, no-go decision have to be made?
The construction office is working with contracting now to get a mod in place for this. So if it's going to be a no-go, it needs to be soon. The contractor has been volunteering, I'm sure we'll pay for it in the end, but they've agreed to kind of give direction to the design. You know, a small bit of rudder effect up, I guess, up front can really impact, or has been able to impact, the estimated installation times. So they're contributing to it now. And we'll need something in place contractually next week or two.
So as you're doing that, we need to get this updated form and get everybody's concerns and a mitigation plan together and coordinate that.
From my standpoint, I think we can, there's some small mitigation we probably do. If then what you do is DSM, I think we can work something. The big issue is going to be is flow and leakage. That's where I see it's going to, that's where, because I think we can work through the fallback and get more work. But I think we can make that work. Then the rest is another issue.
And just to clarify that, are there going to be any special tailwater requirements in getting back to Mother Nature, Chum, and tailwater? I think one of the comments I had in here is that we'd have normal tail race fluctuations. Is the contractor with the floating platform, are they able to sustain, let's just say, a change in tailwater from an 8 to a 16? Are there any constraints with the fluctuation? The reason I'm asking is because, again, getting back to tailwater and Chum, how we tweak the river that time of year, sometimes we'll bring it up pretty aggressive in the evening hours and then bring it back down. I don't think I've heard yet crystal clear yet whether there's any type of requirements from the contractor to have...
to keep it steady during
the
day.
Correct. Or
if there's too high, too low, kind of...
I don't believe there's going to be a too high or too low. Whether or not whether or not they can handle that much of fluctuation, I guess, during their, I guess, the start of the day or the end of the day. Mm-hmm. Kind of goes into their means and methods. We don't quite, we're getting feedback from them on, well, we should be hearing from them today of when they want to talk about that in the next couple of days.
Okay.
So if they are on a floating plant and need to temporarily support the flume components while we're swapping out anchor systems or support systems, then that would be more of a I guess, fluctuating tail races would be more of a concern then. Their first go around through it and discussing their means and methods, they were talking about supporting it from the top with spreader beams across the top of the ladder on the original supports. So, which means that would be a static point, and they would have that means and method would not be susceptible to a fluctuating tail race.
Okay.
So, but that's, you know, that's predicated on having a large crane available, right? So,
okay.
Or a large land-based crane to reach all the way over the fish ladder. That's not available. They have to look at a barge-mounted crane. It could come down to what
you're dreaming about using a landline. Because then we have to cover.
Not for the divers.
Don't we have to cover the flume again?
No. There had been some discussion about just putting a large one that would reach all the way over. It would have to be a big crawler crane.
They're all settled in your
right, which is where I was going with availability. They're looking into it, and that will obviously affect their means and methods. I had a question for Sean earlier. Maybe that we should ask. I was asking if there's any capacity for the Willamette storage basin to help affect the tail race at Bonneville.
There isn't a big enough dam in the Willamette.
So the Willamette does. Climate affects a little bit, right?
In a flood, during a flood. Storage dams are so small.
During a flood, they do, but not. Yeah.
Okay. Because I know after Labor Day, right, we start to draw everything down. So if we had a storm, we wouldn't even notice. We couldn't even hold the river back or the land back enough to keep that Bonneville at 11.5.
You have a bigger effect to worry about tides.
Okay. Well, rats. Well, they have all those dams down the land.
There's some call dams, but I guess, yeah, the storage capacity.
So it's noon. Can we kind of wrap this and decide on, it looks like we have a little homework assignment. You got to turn it around as quick as possible.
I'll revise the
request. Call early next week.
I would say we have to have something next week early as possible.
Yeah.
Tuesday morning?
And if you want to have a Tuesday evening, better sort of be gone. So Monday at 3 o'clock. Sean, but you might want to call me. Call me about 9.
Rick.
Has left the conference.
So is it 3 o'clock Monday or is it going to be Tuesday morning?
I don't know what my schedule is, but that's maybe Tammy can tell me if I can.
Would you like me to tell you what your schedule looks like? All right, just a
second. All right, tentatively it's 3 o'clock on Monday, pending Sean's schedule. Your wife
schedule.
Isn't due yet for baby yet. When's your due date there, Sean? When's the due date?
September 1st.
Oh, yeah, you got time.
Well,
it's an index of delivery.
Yeah,
the condition monitoring.
I guess one last thing, just an anecdotal, I guess, is the we measured, I guess, went out and measured with a price meter a few times the actual velocities in and around the fish ladder there, and a couple of different tail races, and in several different unit configurations. Both when the tail race was at about 15 and a half, 16 feet, and then again when it was lower at 13 and a half, 14 feet. And the conditions that were fine for unit operations that were fine at the higher tail race levels were a problem at the lower tail race levels. And that was where dive safety decided that we needed no flow there to protect the divers or to give the divers a safe environment. So just as if we are able to hit the even lower tail or chum tail race elevation requirements, 11.5, because this last year was 13.5, that could potentially exacerbate that problem if we are trying to run units in the tail race.
During the day.
Yeah.
But you were talking
about what?
Okay.
I
think
I thought
the table this morning.
Right.
I thought you were going
for
the South
Fishery. No. So, even I guess trying to give the contractor all his chances for success if we're going to not want to.
Right. So many unknowns.
If it's a dry fall, the tailwater can be a few of
them. We might even bump into our 5-foot minimum.
Yeah. All right, so 3 o'clock Monday is the next call. 3 o'clock Monday, you're going to...
I'm still around.
3 o'clock. Sean, your calendar isn't available, but you can... I guess for you, sooner the better.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's keep going here. Let's knock this out. We got some other... Is that it on lamprey? You got temperature protocols to talk about?
Yeah, so
the unknown.
We don't know. I did go through.
Did Aaron get information?
Yeah, Aaron Jackson's scrapping data for 5 years of collecting fish and transporting them from John Day. Just the range of temperatures that was over. And there was no correlation with mortality in temperatures. Very low mortality in general. A couple of instances where it was higher or lower temperatures. So called Gary and talked about what I was seeing, and he suggested that we could use the people that are working the trap as a way of monitoring the situation and potentially discovering limiters. So where we're at right now, they are still operating the trap. Only the last tribe still collecting fish. They don't have a lot of money for the effort, so how often it gets operated is really dependent on them. And the last temperature I heard from there was, 22 maybe? One of the higher ones so far this year.
Yeah.
Celsius. So.
73.
They're taking notes on what they see in the fish. Yeah, the thing is, as soon as they get them from the basket, they're introducing them into their transportation water and they begin cooling it.
But, yeah, but I mean, as far as the other temperatures, the traffic water, whatever they're doing there.
Typically doesn't get hotter than that, but it's just
kind of right. So far, it's an issue.
Or at least
hopefully
we don't
see it. All right, that's it. How about avian?
Briefly, before we move on, that freshwater's illustrated.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I had it on the edge here.
Jeremy Monroe, who's been working on a video critic and I think Fish and Wildlife Service about lamprey, wants to do some filming at Bonneville Dam, specifically at Bradford Island Ladder, where the tell me if this is wrong, but with those the two ramps that lead to the kind of the LPS of the kind of AWS channel at Bradford Island. You may recall that those are open ramps, so you can actually just look down and see lamprey coming up the ramps. We wanted to do it at night, and so the question was about use of light, visible spectrum versus infrared. If folks have concerns about using...
How much time does he want to record? Did you
mention that at all?
No, I mean, they talked about staying there, and it depends on how many water.
Yeah, I can remember there to capture images.
Right.
Multiple days, or?
No, I think it was day, night, you know, potentially for a while, so we get some something.
It's really fine cross spectrum for everyone. I'm not going to issue.
No, you'd be away from the sand. There's questions about whether Lamprey react to the light or not. I know the work that Mary Moser did suggested they didn't, but you know, you talk to some of the tribal guys who collect Lamprey and they use light sometimes to, you know, as part of their collection techniques. So.
Start a fire.
So if you don't have an opinion on it,
I'm going to leave some Brian and Lamprey tasking there. I'll keep worried with it. I'm on keyboard.
You guys have any issues?
This should be all good.
All right. And when's this occurring? Next week?
Sometime in the next couple of weeks.
Well, why don't they use infrared just because that would probably be the best approach? Right.
And otherwise, do it
correct for the software.
All right.
I think we've got it for nighttime stuff. Just think some moves through that already. We'll just see if there are access.
If fish is usually running out of fish.
Right.
That's
right.
What we told them.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so daytime 8602.
Do it. Avian, anything of interest to report?
The in general, foraging is decreasing, the loafing is increasing, the cormies are moving in.
Go up to the 205
ridge,
you can see it. The
clones
are going down, and
the clones
are going up.
Yeah. Okay. Where'd Scott go? Do you guys have any VPA updates?
So there's a staff
and a task. Coordination forms?
We covered them all.
Doble? Got yeah. That? Fish passage plan dates, and
yeah, the only thing on that coordination form was what I talked about earlier this morning about maybe working out some language for the sluiceway of Armageddon.
I did talk to Sean Appleton last week, and he said when he ran it through his model for, he didn't have exactly the route. Frozen 2, we said bump it back and open 2 with unit 2, change it back to 15 CFS.
Oh, yeah.
So really,
yeah.
And obviously that changed with the motor.
Yeah, it's covering the whole story.
And then we just have the task.
And now it's done, so it's easy. But if we have a couple of units running, do they want to go over?
Sturgeon kill between the valves.
No,
okay. And our count data. FPC
how we modify it. We have to be able to look back so that you guys can just go and say, yeah, here it is, we approved it, so that I have to call the coordination. That's what I like to say.
We, for what it's worth, just for the background here, was talking about there's, they had done this historically and moved away from it. I think just based on money, time, manpower issues. They used to always do the 4 or 5 that would all involve pulling trash racks and checking them straight and doing whatever, repairing. They're getting back to doing that, so it's a sort of a new thing for us to address. And of course, they started with doing one during most of the decision from the others. They're doing it slower at speed because it's down on that. So, yeah, it's.
Are there any other issues that come up to that cause us to have to change gate settings? And
Scott, do you have any updates?
Go-to plan.
You've got a little add-on. You want to talk about a sturgeon kill?
Well, there's something. One, still pending policy on the RS2 mid-range operation range. So what policy are you going to update? Are they at Mars right now? Or?
I couldn't hear a word
every
you said.
Every time I knock on the door, I get taken number. So I've inquired about it multiple times.
So it's you guys are doing a bias. This is like low priority. Well, you're back to number 2 years.
Well, I think I can inquire again after today's meeting. I've inquired multiple times since every time.
Well, if nothing, it's the same change form. Mm-hmm. I think it's November when they do.
Correct.
So I'll just resubmit the change form again. So.
Well, I think
it's really fun to do that.
I know, I enjoy it too. I think it's the intent and spirit is it's already submitted, it's in the queue. And so.
Yeah, but if I don't know, I think within like 6 months, I usually.
This is going to have to be an RPA in 2018.
I think so. That would have been cool. Excellent.
Plan ahead.
Yeah, I won't even ask about camel special treatment, so.
You can, if it makes you feel better, go for it.
No! It gives me.
Go for it.
Is my hearing bad?
Can you hear any of this?
I can.
Holy shit.
Tell me that too.
What?
Can
you hear anything?
So on.
Getting old.
Was it July?
We'll come down here and listen.
So July 24th to 25th, fairly large number of, I think they said between 24 and 25 large oversized sturgeon were examined below John Day in different degrees of decay. They're all over. I mean, there's some, and they're on both sides of the rivers.
They're on shore.
Today, Andy will send out the pretty photos. Yeah.
Will you email that to me?
I'm going to email to you. I don't know if Wayne did or not.
So what do you think it is?
That's what we're asking you, because we're asking like our terms. I know. So that was the question. Yeah. So, I figured these things have been there for at least 2 weekish. So we're wondering, 2 weeks before that, had we brought turbines on? Have we taken them down? Talking to Tammy, she didn't see anything like that. The other thing that was interesting was a bunch of crayfish were found dead at the same time. So I'd be like, did someone steal something from a barge? I don't know. So these guys, Olaf from, I think it's Oregon, is looking at maybe, he doesn't know if he wants to start the sturgeon task group, and he's trying to figure out, what caused this? Is it, what can we do about this? Is there anything we can do about it?
Anybody doing any crossies?
They didn't find them. I think they tried to grab a couple samples, but they're so far gone.
That radiation leak out of Hanford and animated that.
Yeah, because one thing was there wasn't really any ghost light strikes on any of them. That's one thing that's awesome. Light strikes? That's for splash. Yeah, light strikes. I mean, there's some that chunks out.
I've had a few in very formally about freeway, I think, in the last 2 months, about the last 3 months or so.
Big ones?
There was one big one. In fact, we pulled it up. It was a fresh kill. We think it may have been a mostly mortality. It was about a, it was a big fish, about 9-10 feet.
Yeah.
We were going to save it for WDFW to come and take a look at. Somebody stole it. we think probably for the eggs.
Right.
I mean, who wants to eat some fish that's been dead for 2 or 3 days?
That's what we thought it was poaching.
Yeah.
It had been cut open. But
yeah, but this had not been cut open before.
Yeah.
The catfish, but it did have evidence of hooking mortality.
Yeah.
And I saw about a 5 or 6 foot one just in the last week, but it was too far gone to tell what it was. And before that, we had about, I think, about a 7 or 8 footer in the 4 feet. Well, no, actually, we had a big one before. They brought about 10 footers.
It appears to be a mystery because we didn't have any unusual operations. In fact, because of Line 3, we were very stable. I mean, we had only a limited number of units. Plus, another factor, I mean, if they were coming out of the turbines, they usually surface pretty quickly downstream of the dam. And we have so many eyes right now. The last couple of months, we have... USDA hazers on the boat downstream of the powerhouse BRZ for a good part of the day. We have pike minnow anglers, we have public. So somebody would have reported, so it doesn't seem those fish were kind of related to our operation.
I think one thing you need to be looking at is property parasite loads too. We've suspected one of our technicians is quite a good sturgeon fisherman too, and a pretty good biological background. And
he has suspected, he's been catching fish that are real sluggish, and we had one that we took out of the scroll case last year that was real sluggish, you know, much more sluggish than they should have been, and we're suspecting possibly parasite loads too. The problem is that when a fish dies, the first thing you leave are the parasites. So, but if you could maybe do some sampling of fish or something like that, or check parasite loads.
Well, no, it's just like,
could be related.
My sturgeon group cast me and started, they said, the guts photos, guys, the fish, what's going on? So I did standard call around. They seem to put together a little more detailed information.
Checking with ODEQ and DEQ?
You know, we could have said the coal once again slaughtering lots of sturgeon.
It could be a very real combination, kind of a whole stormwater. Spawning stress, temperature stress, parasite loads.
That's what I was going to say.
So my problem is, I was just, they said, hey, ask us. I said, I was going to bring it up at a pharmacy, did anything strange out of it. I'm going to email this out, and my parts I'm not familiar with them, so I'm going to give you some of them. Okay, I mean, that's
what I see. But look at the tributaries for any spills or fire activity where something would have gone in. No retardant, anything that could have got dragged in there a couple weeks ago.
We're pretty much on fire oil spills.
Are you?
Any spills.
Okay, so you should have known.
Did they dump retardant? I don't know if they did.
Could you guess whether there were males, females?
I don't know. I just got.
If they're all the males, if they're just like, if it was part of the poaching, and they're just taking the females to the row and then dumping the males.
But there's no evidence of any sutra.
Yeah, you have to cut. I mean, I don't
right, but
it's easy to tell them.
Can you tell?
You got to cut open the seat.
For a surgeon.
So is there any fisheries going on that they would have culled through and put them back in the warm water after they go back and being laying on a boat for a couple hours is a little more stressful than normal?
It was, but I'm saying 25 in like 2 weeks.
Well, I'll tell you, back in the 80s going out, I mean, we would leave sturgeon laying on that boat until we were done fishing when I was out with the Umatillas, and we'd go back over by Arlington Boardman there, and processing would take place, and anything that wasn't going to get kept would get put back in the river then after being on a boat for quite a while. The warm water temperatures at the surface right now could really be stressful.
Really warm water. Yeah, 25 seems like a fair number of our fish. It was like a couple, I could see that. 25, and
there's
probably more.
Yeah, so to wrap it up,
I don't know.
Is
this
good?
It's not our fault.
Chris, somebody else.
Are we going to go to the case?
Well, the message is
anything else you want to check out?
This one was, so Dr. Dave used to go to all the counters and get like pounds and pounds of granite. He was in well, unfortunately, Brandon from a PC call, and he got a southern drawl or something like that. That sounds a bit like half asleep. So, when he asked, he was told he couldn't get the data, only the supervisor could get the data out. Which, I mean, I understand. The problem is, like, when there's like.
David Wills has left the conference.
Sometimes it's kind of timely. So we're wondering, is there a problem with us just giving hourly raw data and knowing it's raw data?
There is a contractual problem with calling. And so, you know, the only way that you can really get the data would be either through Greg Newby or John Dalen.
Carolyn Schneider has left the conference.
The lawyer ran up ladder to get the hourly out, but the contract actually reads that they have 4 days to get us hourly counts. John gets this stuff out once a day. You know, it would essentially take a contract mod and some funds to facilitate that.
So, I guess they call it, guys say, hey, please fax your
Well, it's sort of like me deciding that, hey, you know, this guy's cleaning your office, but while he's there, would you mind giving me a call and telling me what kind of chemical he's using and how much time he's spending on your office versus somebody else's? And you'd say, well wait a minute, like, that's going to cost this guy like a half hour extra time, and am I going to pay for it?
Well, these guys think about that sheet and give some anyway, so just like faxing it.
It's really a contractual issue. We're trying to be cooperative. We feel like we're providing the same product. I know there's a lot of things that took place in the past that weren't written down in the contract.
Well, that's part of things. Like, cause, I mean, yeah. I mean, cause it's a long time. Like, and this was kind of those things. Like, you know, it was a flexible system because this is a resource. Sometimes we need this information much more timely, and sometimes Greg Moody's gone, and it's kind of hard to find.
Generally, John, Dalen, or Greg, one of the two is there, but, right. And, yeah. You know, the other person you could contact would be Lisa Wright.
Well, she never picks up on
if there's an emergency.
She's got call ID. She knows who's calling. So, it's just a contract issue, so I guess we can talk about it when contracts come up. Hey, this is something you need to add in there.
Well, it would be something where you could look at setting aside an emergency funding source as you went out and renegotiated the contract and said, hey, let's set aside some money for emergency calling in. I guess what you'd want to do is justify why, when we've had emergencies, that Greg and or John hasn't been able to facilitate it. Because, you know, we've been in an emergency for 2 weeks, and my understanding is we've been able to facilitate that.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm just saying, like, it's just one more hoop to get through the data, and if Dave is called this box sheet, I can disperse it to you guys.
I totally understand it, but remember, we're the government. This is a contracting issue.
I'm just going to remind Tammy that some of you know, it's happening down at Bonneville. You know, you're going to have to
Chris Penny
has left the conference.
Well, the reality is that everything doesn't stay the same over time, and we are trying to, at least the awareness we have over in Walla Walla, and since we hold the contract, as is that a lot of the contract violations that have taken place overseas and elsewhere with the Corps have caused a lot more scrutiny on contractual processes, and it's starting to affect everyone.
That's fine. We're just kind of curious why it suddenly we were able to get everyone else. It's like, oh, no, you got to talk about it.
Well, I think WDFW politically, you know, had a stake and worked with the region to the best of their ability. And the contractor we have now is willing to do that, although we have to be fair, because as soon as we let somebody start calling in and directing our contractor, then we're financially liable for whatever someone calling in asks them to do. And we don't want to go there.
No, that's fine. I'm just saying, like, you know, if they want to be helpful, that's great. If they're feeling that this help is contractually problematic. Understand.
It's not them telling us that, it's just that's the contract, and we don't want to see people stepping over the line. So historically and within the region, and it goes to research as well as here, there's a tendency for people from the region, this goes back to the days of Steve Rain, trying to direct the contractor to change what was in the scope of work from what the Corps had. It puts the liability back on.
I mean, no.
Honestly, it's an ongoing issue of people directing a contractor, which is inappropriate. That's the message.
I would hardly say asking hey, if you got a chance, could you fax us the data so we can have a quick take a look at the hour and see if something changed. I'm a little stymied that that
is. Are you talking about daytime or like video counseling?
No, just the hourly hour sheets.
But you see, it's not their responsibility on a daily basis with our current contract to provide the hourly data in less than 4 days.
I understand that. We were just asking because even a couple of weeks ago, they were very amenable saying, yeah, we understand there's a lot of interest in this. Sometimes information is hard to get out. Dave, as our adult inspection person for FPAC, is charged with keeping track of adult facilities. And he keeps FPAC pretty well informed of what's going on. So it made a lot of sense for saying, hey, if you need that information, get it out to us in a timely manner so we can talk about these things. So when we go to TMT, we're not floundering around anymore than we normally are. That's great. But if you understand that's a contractual problem, we understand that, and we'll be looking at other avenues or revenues or talking different ways.
I think we were trying to have such frequent TMT calls that brings it up, but, you know, Yeah, we feel like we were able to respond in a pretty timely manner. As soon as these guys were finishing shifts, they were willing to run it through either John or Greg. We got it up on the TMT website. There's nothing that would happen any quicker, even if we did a contract mod and put money in place for you to directly call. So,
well, all we're saying is just fax to Dave. Dave then would just email out to all the FPAC members so they have the information in front of them. Because sometimes you guys have computer problems or have difficulty putting stuff up in the web. We understand that. That's just the joys of technology. So,
let's get us.
You
know, that
would be awesome. Yeah. I'm going to change one.
Yeah, change
so, one. So, we're just kind of curious of what had changed and that kind of stuff. We made a feed that was going to be contracts, but we understand.
Okay.
Good. Change one.
Anything else?
Dave,
you
can
go.
No,
I think they should get a Twitter account.
Hashtag
fish counters.
No, an
Amber Alert.
Burr, is that it?
I think that's it. So we're supposed to have an adult fish county task group meeting.
Awesome.
But Gary just have to leave because of the emergency family. Yeah. 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 You want to just remove that, and then we'll have to reconvene because Gary's got some family issues.
So, why don't I distribute some handouts that I had for that, and then maybe after we have the next one is an avian subgroup, maybe we can have a short discussion or get some feedback via email.
Come down a day early?
Yeah.
In that afternoon?
The Wednesday before? Yeah, I can do that. So, would it be better for me to just email this out?
Yeah. So, those on the phone, we're done here, and the Fish County contract, or in the Adult Fish County subtask group, is going to meet the day before the next FPAC meeting. There was a family emergency for Frederick, so he can't attend today. Thanks.
All right, bye, all.
Thanks.